Senior members of the Department of Tourism and senior members, officials from the Department of Public Works. Compliments of the season. Today, Minister, we invited you. Further, this is the second time to help us. But we're going to start with the Department of Tourism first. Our members are still stuck on the road for the buses and the camps. They are going to join us. But because I know that it's a busy, busy day today, preparing for the sauna, don't want to keep you here waiting. They'll join us. Minister, let me declare the meeting is official open. My name is Dumisani Kwimbi. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Petitions and Executive Undertakings. I'm a permanent delegate from the Western Cape. On my left here is our content advisor, Dr. Gondwe. On my right is the committee secretary, Mr. Kize. Let me welcome you to the committee, especially the minister, for your time, Minister. I know you have got a tight schedule, but you managed to come and present your case in front of the committee. Without wasting time, our agenda is only two agendas, two items. The Minister of Tourism and the Minister of Public Works. Minister, we are overseeing and scrutinizing the implementation of progress reports on the executive undertakings made by you, Minister of Tourism, during the policy debate on budget vote number 33 for the Department of Tourism on the 17th of May, 2016. So, Minister, we would like to hear from you, how far are you with executive undertakings that you did on that Saturday. Without wasting time, I'll hand over to you. You can do your overview make your presentation. Thank you. Over to you, Minister. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you very much, okay. Chairperson. Yes, it is a busy day today. I still have to go to the hairdresser and buy myself a new tie for tomorrow. It's a very busy day today. Thank you, Chairperson. We are dealing with the commitments made in the 2016-17 policy debate, if you like, and budget votes, and the commitments made for that financial year. It is of course. Not a lot of time has gone by since then, including I did have a little sabbatical period as well to refresh myself, came back refreshed, and we are in the process of implementing those commitments, and of course we've gone far beyond that because time has passed since then. Just a few words. Our Director General, Victor Terrache, will do a presentation. We've highlighted some of the, pulled out some of the commitments made, and we'll talk to those commitments. But we'll also use the opportunity, with your permission, Chairperson, to, getting things don't stop at the end of a financial year, to talk more broadly about where we are now, how these programs are continuing. By way of introduction from my side, tourism remains a growth sector. And its contribution to GDP is quite substantial, especially if you look at the whole value chain. So, it's been hovering for a few years now around the 2.9%, close to 3% mark as direct contribution. but the direct and indirect contribution is estimated by the World Tourism Travel Council and Travel Council and by others as close to 9.5%, around 9.5%. So it's considerable. Because tourism is a very labor-intensive sector by definition, the way it functions, it translates into more jobs than that kind of contribution to GDP would translate into in other sectors. So we're talking about in the region of 730,000 direct jobs, people directly employed in the hospitality sector, tourism sector, but across the value chain, which is considerable, it translates into about 1.5 million jobs. So it is substantial. Remains on a growth path, Chairperson, but 2018 was not a good year for tourism, although it remained stable. There wasn't a decline in numbers, declined from some markets, but overall not a decline. But it didn't grow the way we thought it would grow. And in particular, there were a few factors that impacted on tourism numbers. The water shortage in the Western Cape was a major factor, and that's been expressed by many tour operators from across the world, including locals. So Cape Town was particularly badly affected. However, there were some other factors that inhibited the growth in tourism numbers. I can say with a great deal of confidence that, you know, that we've got through that. I think the messaging did some damage. The day zero message from the Western Cape, or from although with all good intention, it was intended to shock people into action. And of course, people did reduce their water consumption, but the effect on tourists across the world was that we do not want to be in Cape Town when day zero happens. What if we're in Cape Town and Cape Town runs out of water? So it had quite a significant effect. As I said, we're over it. The projections for 2019 are good. One of the inhibiting factors that we've had to grapple with over the last few years has been the visa issue and the extent to which we are making it easier for people to come to South Africa. Over the last period, we've made some advances. There are some more still to be made, I think the DG will refer to that in a moment, but I think the big game changer is going to be when we do what many other countries are doing, hopefully next year. It is in the hands of the Department of Home Affairs, but if we are able to migrate to an e-visa system, which many other countries already have in place, including countries that don't have the capacity that we do, yet they've managed to put e-visas in place. So the other thing is, as we speak, obviously we are grappling and working hard on measures to stimulate the economy, the stimulus and recovery plan that is announced by the president, and tourism features quite prominently in the plan because it is what one might describe as a low-hanging fruit. It's a sector that you could get going relatively quickly, and it translates into the jobs that we desperately need very quickly as well. So. And of course, the president has highlighted many times that in order to get it growing, we need to address some of these factors that stand in the way of tourism growth. And the tourism sector itself, the business sector, has emphasized it. So that becomes a challenge. Since that 2016-17 financial year, of course, some of the advances came up with a very comprehensive revised strategy on tourism with a number of pillars. I'm not going to run you through those pillars, but on each of the pillars we're making progress. So for the interest of the provinces, they might want to know what have we done in the area of destination development in their provinces. The DG can give more information as required, because clearly the emphasis on his presentation is going to be on that 2016-17 year, the commitments made in that budget speech. But much else has been achieved over the last couple of years. So on that note, I just have to say once again that we're very confident that we are moving in the right direction, and by putting a few pieces in place, and I'm sure the President will, in his State of the Nation address, will say a few positive things and confident things about tourism growth, but that's where we are at the moment. We're working very hard with our sister departments to ensure that all the factors that stand in the way of tourism growth, that we go as far as we can to address these factors and therefore we are confident on what can be achieved in the years to come. And on my last note, to say that we have never, you know, one of the pillars in our tourism strategy, one of the five pillars, is the transformation of the sector. So we're not just looking at growth in tourist arrivals, growth in jobs, but we're looking at the transformative growth or inclusive growth, and translating the growth into not only jobs, but into opportunities for black entrepreneurs. And the opportunities are substantial. Even as part of the reporting on the commitments made in 2016-17, the DG will refer to some of our transformation efforts so that we ensure that future growth is a much more inclusive growth. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, and Honourable Members, and also recognizing the Deputy Minister of Public Affairs, President. The outline of the presentation, that will be slide 2, will report on the progress on the interpretive signage at the various iconic sites that we had made a commitment to do. We will also report back on the work opportunities that were created from both what we call the SRI, we call it now the Working for Tourism Program, as well as other programs in the department. Also on the promotion of access, largely to government sites, mainly by South Africans. So this touches on issues of availability and so on, so there were commitments around that. And then we'll also look at projects that target learners, youth, pensioners. So this is almost like the social side of tourism. Then we will conclude with the matters pertaining to what strategies were developed by the council, the tourism, be charter council. I will continue to refer to it as the transformation council. So what strategies did they develop, and some of the work that we see coming out of their monitoring of the work that is being done in the sector, whether by government or by the private sector.
Thank you. We just sorry to interrupt you. Want to welcome the two members. we get your apology message, madam. The Dr. Mandima. Matim is one of our members representing Limpopo. And the next to him is Honorable Oliphant representing Mpumalanga. I'm sorry, Northern Cape. And then Honorable Wana coming in. She also a permanent delegate representing the Eastern Cape. Sorry, DG, and we were already started. The minister already given the overview. Then the DG is presenting. You're welcome. Thank you, DG. Thank you very much. Sorry to.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. After the budget vote, there was a request to get update to Parliament with regards to the NCOP, with regards to the implementation. At that time, it was only about 2 months into the implementation. So the feedback that we provided simply indicated that we're still at it. We have not necessarily gotten to a point where we could provide details with regards to progress. So hence now this particular meeting that has been scheduled for us to be able to provide this. On slide number 4, I will then start with the interpretive signage. Just to put a bit of context, there's a lot of annexures to the presentation which then show exactly what is it that we're talking about. So when one visits some of these signs, there's no story, there's no information about it. This covers that particular gap. We had identified a number of signs, Freedom Park. We completed all the designs, and we also did the production of all the necessary material. Four of these have already been erected, and there's some work that is being done on site at Freedom Park, which upon completion of that work, which relates to the refurbishment of the building and so on. But once that work has been completed, then these things are ready for erection on that site as well. At the Nelson Mandela capture site, that is already completed. We worked there in partnership with the Apartheid Museum. They had a lot of experience around this. So that is already done and done. Some of the work that we had also committed to was that we would do this as well at the Union buildings. The planning around this is fairly advanced in terms of the work that was supposed to be done. We have an indication we're implementing together with the Heritage Resource Agency. The indication is that we will be able to complete this by the end of this financial year. For that particular site, obviously, Public Works is also a partner because they are the custodians there. The building itself. Robben Island, we have already completed that work, also Duggenstein, we have completed it as well. On slide 6, these are sites that were not necessarily in the commitment, that we are also showing that the project was, it's a continuous project to make sure that all these iconic sites, which are the sites that most of our tourists actually visit, we would like to make sure that they've got all this interpretive signage. The Transfrontier Conservation Area, the Golden Gate National Park. Need I add also that the Golden Gate National Park, we also discovered some remains of evidence that there were dinosaurs. And there is a center that is being built. We are supported in terms of funding by the EU. The construction has already started. It's going to be an iconic site in terms of that aspect of tourism. The Gugulethu 7 Memorial in the Sarah Bartman Heritage Site. With the Sarah Bartman Heritage Site, all of them are in good progress, but with that specific one, with the new declaration in terms of its heritage status, it has led to some changes in the kind of plan that we had, because heritage sites require a particular protocol to be followed as opposed to the remainder of the other sites. And then I've got a number of other sites, whether it's the SKA node, or it's Shushuwe, or it's Dresas, whatever. But it also demonstrates that these sites are by and large across the country. But of course, iconic sites in their own nature would relate to the story of the site. So the prioritization also gets into that. Then on slide 7, we have got the Vista Information Center that we made a commitment to do at Robben Island. The site was identified, and it was an existing building next to the harbour at Robben Island. However, after some assessments by the Heritage Resources Agency, they have now allocated a different site. But in terms of the plans and so on, that is not affected. Those plans would still be able to fit within this new site. So now what they have to do is to be able to get people that would then roll out the project itself. And we envisage that all the necessary approvals and so on should be ready by end of this financial year, which then allows for us to begin to do the necessary work subsequently. And then the issues about about the refurbishment of this other building. Then there is a restaurant that is also proposed. the detailed designs for these restaurants, the canopy restaurant, is not bricks and mortar. So we've got the designs for this. We are aiming to have the construction commence in February this year, which is now. So they're just making the decisions in terms of who will be doing what and so on. And of course the SARA permissions and so on. If I'm not mistaken, they are sitting either this week or they sat late last week to have the final decisions on this. And then the archives, that process is going to be completed by March 2019. Now this is a very important project because it allows us to be able to then have that content. This is archives that have been there for many, many years together with the University of the Western Cape, but it's to make sure that they are there and also that they are digitized. So that we see as an important aspect of this project. The training of tourist guides, which is a continuous project that we've been doing, we also recognize that language is a very important aspect of it. So we also included in that Mandarin training for the guys in Robben Island, and others were also exposed to cultural acclimatization and so on. But furthermore, they were exposed to sites that have similar characteristics so that they understand the totality of the story of Robben Island. And that will be something we would still continue to do in terms of making sure that that level of understanding is there. We initiated with the Robben Island Museum something called Open Day, which is done around Heritage Month. Obviously, it's based on how much resources we can afford to do that. But less privileged people in and around the city of Cape Town were able to take them there. 2017 we took 1,400, and 2018 we were able to take 1,528. It's something we would like to continue, but of course dependent on resources. And we also supported the development of a Google app, but largely Google came on board in terms of most of the work, and also there was also another corporate related sponsor that came in, which I'm not necessarily going to mention. The app, what it does is one is able to take a virtual tour of Robben Island throughout the entire island, and it stimulates wanting to actually do the real experience. So it's in part something that is assisting with the marketing efforts, but it's also telling the story of Robben Island to the world. So you can access that immediately. We have indicated where to find it, and we would encourage that honorable members do use this app in terms of more information. And we have a very special project related to crafts and memorabilia. And we have identified ladies that from the surrounding townships who have been trained in terms of the development of memorabilia, but there will be further training that we are still going to also do with regards to issues of how to certify these things and so on. Phase two now of this process has already commenced, and what we're trying to do now is to put the prototypes, the mock, so that everybody could start seeing what is to come and see if the market is getting interested in it. The idea is that there will be memorabilia that you can't find anywhere else, but you will only find in Robben Island. But this becomes the cooperative that actually will be able to provide that particular support. So we feel that's a significant transformative project that we're embarking upon. Robben Island is a very important site for our history, very important site for our heritage tourism. What we also linked this whole support to was to ensure that it becomes a green or environmentally friendly environment. As we know, it used to operate completely on diesel. So working with Department of Public Works, Arts and Culture, and to an extent Environmental Affairs, we put in place a mini photovoltaic power station, so to say. And it has a lifespan of about 20 years or so. It's saving on a monthly basis in the region of about 230 or so thousand rands of diesel. Ever since the minister made the commitment, to date 3.5 million of diesel. I mean, to date, in fact, there is from the operational date, which was October, 3.5 million worth of diesel has been saved. But in the process, it is also saving the environment, which is the most significant aspect of it. I will not bother you with the technical details of how much it produces and so on. The commitment that we made with regards to the work opportunities, so the slide that she had just shown shows other sites that we have also done work that relates to this photovoltaic. But in the main, we're saying we're going for a green destination. We want to make sure that we take that status, being a green destination globally. In terms of the work opportunities, the areas that we generated these jobs from, they included training, and in terms of training, there were different areas. We trained chefs. And then I'm told the absorption rate with regards to the chefs is way above 60%. Sommeliers, hospitality youth, and food safety assurers, an example of the food safety assurers, some of them, this is just one group. Others go and work elsewhere, so that there's a group that is working with the Cecilia Makiwane Hospital in Eastern Cape. So what they do, they go through what food is bought, how is it processed, how is it used by the hospital, what is the extent of wastage and so on. That has already brought in some savings for the hospital in terms of what they were spending on food. So this is something that does have a much bigger potential, broader than just within our hospitality establishments. Other areas would include the youth that are doing work in the coast through the Blue Flag program. So it's a number of programs that we're implementing that are able to actually bring us these jobs. Of course, we didn't meet that target. It was an ambitious target, but we didn't necessarily meet it. The following year, though, we exceeded the target that we had set for the following year. So it's a continuous process. There are factors that affect the implementation processes where you find there will be a third party that you appoint to, say, manage this for us. There will be dropouts, all those types of issues, and different types of dropouts and so on. We will continue to strive to get higher numbers with regards to those programs, and we'll take it from there. Social tourism, we have a number of government-owned entities that are providing these discounts. If you go to the national parks, as an example, in some of the provincial parks,
there is a dual, sort of a dual pricing scheme where South Africans don't pay the same amount as international tourists. So that's one of the things. But we went further. We developed a catalogue of particular specials that were offered by these parks that we are talking about. If honorable members also go to South African tourism.net, which is our marketing entity website, and go to the short left link, there's a lot of discounted packages that are there. These are with the support of the tourism industry. It's not just the ones that are coming from the government side. But that's something that we continuously do in terms of negotiating and trying to find such packages. In terms of youth and exposing them to tourism, we linked this to the celebration of our various years. So the year of our Tambo, we took youth that were coming from Bizana and youth that were coming from Ekurhuleni, and exposed these youth from Ekurhuleni to the life of OR in Bizana, and exposed the others to the life of OR on the other side, but in the process also making sure that they visit certain sites and so on. The subsequent year, we brought youth summit into Parliament. I think members might have seen that. And the youth were able to deliberate about various issues, but on the side, so they would deliberate on all those issues, but on the side, we exposed them to different sides. We exposed them to career opportunities. We exposed them to what does tourism actually mean for them as individuals, in terms of themselves as just experiencing it, but as people that would want to take advantage of it in future for their own career growth and so on. The youth summit was obviously in celebration of the year of Tata Nelson Mandela. The other initiative, so we take advantage of things that already exist. So you would have youth that are playing sports. The South African school sports, the football component of it, they host all these tournaments across the country. And we started with Gauteng as where the tournaments were taking place, and Free State. But people who were participating in these things were coming from, these learners were coming from, these youth were coming from different parts of the country. Ordinarily, they would have still gone to those places, but they would have gone, played soccer, slept maybe in a hotel or in a school or wherever, after which then they would have gone back home. So we take advantage of that and then start exposing them to, when you are going there for your soccer, we will take you to this museum, we will take you to these attractions, and then they start understanding this thing. We are building a culture of travel in the future, and we're making sure that at least these youth, some of them will become stars and they will be very influential. They will be able to pan this message even better than we can do. So that's the kind of approach that we're taking. We'll take this further now to also Netball Association, so that it's for those young ladies who may not necessarily want to play soccer, because soccer is all-inclusive, they would also be able to experience this and be exposed to the same. And I also need to mention that we have also worked with DEFSA, and through that, 30 school-going children, we took them to Table Mountain. We do the same with the elderly. And I'm not going to go through the details. You can see from which periods where they were coming from and so on.
and we've done the same with military veterans as well. Transformation of the sector, the commitment that we had made here was that we will develop strategies which will be developed by the Charter Council and also the monitoring thereof. I'll just highlight something about the monitoring. They have done the State of Tourism Transformation Report. It's available. The essence of which is that we need to do some more work in terms of ownership, women representation at senior level, whether it's at management or at board level, and that we need to do something about enterprise and supplier development in the sector. So those are the three main things that seem to be coming out of that particular report. The strategy then goes into exactly those things. How then do we make sure that those areas are then implemented? I'm not going to go to the mandates of the council. I think honorable members are much more familiar with mandates of the councils because it's somewhat standard. So I will go to slide 18. One of the things that we did was to develop guidelines, and these are guidelines for the commercialization of state-owned tourism enterprises and issues of concessions. So they would guide largely issues around concessions. They are already being implemented. So you would see adverts that say we are looking for someone to run this or to run that. They are behind-the-scenes discussions with regards to how should those elements then be integrated into this. And we believe that that would assist quite a lot in terms of making sure that at the end of the day, the ownership aspect, because these operators would have a much stronger content in terms of ownership, but also the development of these enterprises. So one of the things that we're doing with the license and pass is going to these communities nearing the around, in and around these parks so that we're able to give them information about what does it mean to do this kind of business in these parks. Whether you want to be a concessionaire or whether you want to be a supplier, and suppliers would vary. It could be a supplier into issues of hospitality associated, or even issues public with issues of construction, because it's not necessarily the same as when it's not inside the park. There are certain standards to be followed. Even with the operators and tourist guides, they take them through a whole different training on how you do things within the parks and so on. So those are some of the opportunities that this tries to guide. Executive Development Program for Women. This is in response, obviously, to the fact that there isn't enough representation. Came out quite strongly. So what we are doing, what we've been doing with that, we worked with UNISA Business School. We developed an entirely new program. So it includes both tourism element and the business element. These are people that are taken from already the industry. They are in operational environment, some are at middle management and so on, and they then get to be trained on the business aspect, not the operations. They understand the operations, but the business aspect. We can report that we've seen a lot of promotions and in significant establishments. We just don't want to mention them by name, but we're talking about people who are general managers of big hotels through those promotions and so on. There's huge demand where you find one large hotel group saying, can I send you up to 7 people in a year? So that is gaining traction. The unfortunate thing is that countries like Dubai, even the U.S., they are looking at these skills. and some of them end up leaving the country. So those are some of the issues. The capacity building which we are doing, and again, it's not only for employment. Others decide to actually venture into entrepreneurship after they've received this training, but it's different areas. I've talked about some of these areas earlier, but we've got a lot of people that come from being chefs who decide they don't necessarily want to work for somebody else, they would rather consider starting something. But the absorption of those that actually go directly into some of this. So you will find some of these youth, when you go to establishments, just check if you see that that chef is wearing something that has got coat of arms, it means they come from our problem. If you see someone who comes to serve you and they've got some coat of arms, they come from our problem. But we're doing this in partnership with the industry, so you would have your chef's association being part of that, so that they are able to progress to professional level and they are able to actually stand on their own. And we will continue to implement this because the demand is high and the return is also high. The other aspects in terms of enterprise and supplier development, what we've done here, we run incubators. We've got an incubator in the Northern Cape, in Mpumalanga, in Limpopo, in Northern Cape, not Northern Cape, in Northwest. The one we started with was the Northwest one. We are seeing very good results. It's in the Mukwas area. So what happens is the bigger hotels in and around this area now have such confidence in terms of referring people that are coming to their hotels to that particular area. If you go there, you would find the whole area now is like B&B all over that place. But they've got a baking product because Pilanesberg is right in the backyard. And the experiences of Sun City and so on. So that seems to be working. But we take them through all sorts of different trainings, and then they are also exposed to issues of market access and so on. The other thing that I think I could highlight here is the supplier development and tourism, the portal. The portal, essentially, is the essence of it is that it's a matchmaking platform. So we have got people that provide all sorts of other services who would want to supply these services to people that are in the tourism sector, the bigger businesses that are in the tourism sector. So if it's telecommunications, as an example, the Department of Telecommunications would have already sorted out whether this person is certified or not, but they come into this platform and the industry, tourism industry, is able then to buy from those particular suppliers, and that's really the essence of this. So I'm walking, in essence, I'm walking through the strategy and its actual implementation. Then we've got this market access program. We call it MAS. It focuses on both domestic marketing as well as international marketing in terms of the market access. So what do we do? We support small businesses to be able to access marketing platforms, whether it is Tourism Indaba, whether it is WTM. What they do when they get to those platforms, they would then almost like be handheld to be able to walk the ropes, for them to be able to get to a point where they can confidently then sign these particular deals. This very good return on investment. I think Benny can tell you more about the return on investment with regards to this. But in some of the instances, some of these programs, we see the return that goes as high as 1 to 10. So that's really good return on the program. The uptake, we would love to see more. But
what Benny can tell us more. said Benny, can I
more? Oh, Benny Mayer is a colleague of mine who runs the program.
Oh.
Yes. Sorry. And then we also support.
You gotta be careful. You can see how carefully the chairperson is listening.
we also provide support for tourism grading of the establishments. And initially, when we started, we were doing it ourselves. The uptake was not so good. Then we brought in the grading council, and it grew. Then we jointly started promoting it. We are seeing further and further pick up on this. This is very important because it talks to the perceived and real quality in terms of what we offer as a destination. And then we have got another program we run with IDC, which basically deals with sustainability. It could be issues of water, it could be issues of energy and so on. And in this particular program, we've seen uptake, albeit a bit slow, but it's got huge potential for further uptake going into the future. Most importantly, we've got the Tourism Transformation Fund. Now, the Tourism Transformation Fund, it offers a grant to people that want to, people in tourism or want to get into tourism who have applied through the NEF to get funding. So NEF will then bring in the loan component. In some instances, it may consider to take some equity, and we would then provide support with a grant to make sure that we are able to close the gap on a scale. So far, 5 businesses have been able to get this. Honorable members might have seen the minister opening the Graskop Gorge lift. It's one of the projects that actually benefited from this. This is something that we hope would, in future, be able to get more and more uptake. They are coming through, but we need to also give a bit of support with regards to how things get investment ready. So that's the long and short, but the most important tangible thing that we're doing with regards to this one is that there is that grant component. A gap that we've identified so far is for people that want to play big. So someone wants to build a 200 million rand hotel. We are not yet able to close that bigger gap where something of a scale of the Black Industrialist and so on. All this is based on what do we have as resources. But these are things we're looking into. We will stop at that. I'll be checking as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, members, Doc, want to ask questions? Members first, right now, I think we members can ask questions or clarity from this report. Thank you. Over to members. Honorable Oliphant. I said Doc calls on to ask questions. Over to you, Honorable Oliphant.
Thank you, Chair. The first question goes to you, Chair. Chair, you know, I like this piece of paper because we don't see things. I will ask you, how about the sixth parliament come in one Wednesday afternoon if there's nothing for the committees, then we go to Robben Island. I'm asking you, Chair, that one is yours, for an oversight, Chair, because I just wanted to know whether that in the the cell of the Honorable Mandela, Utata Mandela, is that cup been washed, that blanket been, is it still the way I left it? So I must go do oversight, because he's the one who teach us oversight. So that one, you think well with that. But I want an answer when I go out. Silence. Last week, I sleep at the Bonabona game farming. But what I like is we never get lost. The signage was big and clear. We go in, even if the road that is going to the room, if the signage was clear. But now, what made me scared, because I want to come to us. What made me scared while I was sleeping there in the middle of the night? Actually, I never sleep because of the lion was roaring. Every now and then, when I try and get my sleep, the lion, it seems to me the lion is roaring just at my door. Then I will wake up and look, is this guy not coming in? But I don't see anything. I end up even taking a towel put so that it must not even smell me. So, that one. Now one day I was thinking there's this tourist place. You from between Krobler, is it Krikwa town and Krobler's Whoop. There is this tourist attraction. I also understand there's no TV there. Because there at Bonabona there was also no grumble because she was playing at night as well. That is why we grumble. We have to go to Ella. Now I complain about the signage of that, but now I can see they put it in. The signage is there to go to that place, but I don't know it. I'm so curious to know. Coming to the signage between, you know, we like, I don't know, is it longer or shorter roads? You travel, I'm talking about the Northern Cape, you travel from N12 to DR, it's a main road. Then on the corner there, you travel 40 k's into DR. But inside the province, after DR, Orania, the Hope Town, that side, you take that road, or you go via Jacobstad. There is this road when you travel to Colesberg. The signage is very poor. I know it's not yours. I know it's not for the national. But when I talk to the economies of the weather, group or whatever of the tourists, then they are wondering. Now I don't know, is it the municipality who is doing signage or is it the department who is doing signage? Why I'm saying that is because it's free state areas there. When you come from Coffee Plantain via to juggle something out to Colesberg. This side is Free State and it's a dam. And this side, you go via that municipality in Free State, you go to N1 to Colesberg. Now I ask myself, if you have to travel at night, you know, we politicians, we don't have time to go off. I can go off at 6 winter and tomorrow morning I must wake up at Colesberg. Then I want to make shortcuts. It's not clear the dam The road does not show you, yes, there is this road, and up front there is a dam. There is this, is it a stop and this road? It's something like a three-way. At least on that corner there, you must be shown, this is Free State, there is a dam on that side, and this one, maybe you jump on the mountain or whatever, but finally, and even the towns, the showing of the towns is very poor. I only ask you, put emphasis in on that one. Because the other side, when I say that, there's baboons. You stand next to the road, you don't even see that there's baboons. They hit you. Now, it's all those, but I started to like tourism because now my granddaughter made me to like it, 3 years old, because the neighbor used to buy the snake sweets. And when it comes in Daniel's cave, he sees a live snake on top of the fridge, and he said to the father, look, snake. And when the father sees the head of the snake, she wanted to go catch the snake. That is why I said, that is why I'm happy there is prizes for the Santa. Because I can take now, show my kids, what does a lion look like? What does a crocodile look like? What does an elephant look like? All those things, at least you must also consider us, we the local people, because when I'm on leave, I'm a local man. I'm just an ordinary. I'm not a politician. I don't want to go there in politics. I can only politic here because the minister is here. But when I'm there with my family, I'm just an ordinary person that I want to teach, because last week I was getting something from my elder granddaughter asking me, who's the premier of Bloemfontein? Do I know him? I said, politician. It's Newman. It's God. I don't know. Something like that. So that is why I said, thank you for the sunlight. At least now we know we can persevere. Thanks.
Thank you. All of Dr. Tim.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I really don't have questions per se. Just comments, Chair. Really appreciation considering where we started. The information or responses we are given here convince me that indeed our next goal as a country is tourism. Is tourism. Just going through the possible job opportunities. Possible job opportunities, Chair, province by province. I feel that once everything is in place, programs are running, I think this department alone has the potential really to absorb all the unemployed youth. I think so. Now, they mentioned training, upskilling, so on and so forth, which also, Chair, says that we are on the right track as government. And allow me to end by saying, really, this 200 million rand hotel must just come to Polokwane. Have you ever seen a capital with no hotel next to the airport? It's an appeal. And by way of tourism, Limpopo has got so much to offer. The Big Five, the Mapungubwe, everything. So the potential there is yet to be tapped. And like I'm saying, this unemployment of the youth in particular really can be addressed. I just don't know. Unfortunately, SONA is tomorrow, and for sure the speech is done. I would really suggest that there may be more resources. More resources be channeled to this department, because we need to explore new frontiers in our own economy. Yeah, the mining endeavor, they were telling us all the possibilities, but this thing that they're digging from the ground gets depleted. It gets but I think Robben Island will always be where it is, and people of this country will always benefit from visiting it. Bizana will always be where it is. The whole history, if people want to explore or live our history, that's where tourism comes in. A great potential, Jefferson. I say I'm convinced is our next gold for the country. So I wouldn't like people to know 4 or 5 years we were here. My friend and I have not been to Robben Island. And Chairperson. No. I'm seconding the proposal that make it possible that we go to Robben Island. Otherwise, there is a future here, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Wanda.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let me apologize. On our way coming here, there was an accident. Jonathan, I've got a question in slide number. Okay, let me talk about this report is silent because I'm here for a permanent day of the Eastern Cape. In terms of the incubators, this report is silent in my province. Incubator, incubation, yeah. And secondly, the business support. And what is in place in terms of going forward towards the incubation in the Eastern Cape? And you identified other places, but in Mboje, I see the Mkambati issue, but in Mboje is the best. From T-Farm to Mboje is plus minus 15 kilometers. And that road is very much unbearable. So that integration, integrated programs, they should kick out here. Because when we're in Mboje, it's easy to you to see across. But there's nothing. This is further provision. And there's no even a specified issue in terms of the Eastern Cape around the issue of transformation fund. I would request that there should be a plus minus detail about transformation fund. And if it's there, how did the department monitoring that is doing what has been allocated to do? Lastly, Chairperson, I wanted to understand the e-tourism, where is including forest, for instance, Section C in Nomadamba in Tofumvapa. And what is about tourism all in the world? I'm specifying the places, Chairperson, which you cannot see any development around attraction of the tourism in that province. You go to Langen, when you cross to that Langen road crossing to Yuge, which is plus minus 50 k's from Langen, crossing that mountain. There's nothing. So the whole report to me, it's sectional. They're talking about Free State and other problems, but I feel my province is not inclusive of the progress. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Minister, you can see that as much that we are a National Council of Provinces, we are representing our provinces in the National Council of Provinces. Nevertheless, members, you must understand also that the department is responding to the executive undertakings on the that budget, 2016 budget vote.
But
so, honourable member. So, I don't say the department cannot answer, but it was strictly to the four executive undertakings that they must respond to. Is it also?
Yes.
Thank you. So it cannot take the whole thing, but if the department can answer those questions that asked by the members, thank you very much. Minister, and...
I will answer you when the department...
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Minister and your officials. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. I will ask... Ms. Chetia, DDG responsible for destination development, planning and development, to speak to issues about some projects. Some of the projects don't necessarily fall under this, like you said, on the Shepherdson and the undertaking. Some of the projects that we are doing, which would demonstrate the extent of the geographic spread of the footprint of the organization.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think I will speak specifically to the coastal and marine tourism area of work because it relates to the question asked by the Honourable Member. It's a recent area of work, and we've been working in the four coastal provinces, Northern Cape, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. We have now mapped all of the tourism assets that exist in those provinces. We have also mapped the connectivity, so the roads and the issues around directional signage, etc. And we have also mapped what we really think are gaps that exist in those spaces. So specifically in the Eastern Cape, we are completing in partnership with province and local government a master plan for the entire Wild Coast region. That master plan will actually talk to comprehensive tourism development, but not just specifically tourism development, also all of the supporting infrastructure like transport, connectivity of roads, etc., that are required to make tourism work. It also deals with issues of telecommunications. It will also deal with issues of what kind of permitting is required in that very sensitive area. And specifically, we are working with province and local government to look at the developments around Port St. John specifically, but also the hole in the wall. We're also working quite closely with our partners in economic development and our development funding institutions to look at how we support tourism, new tourism development, for example, hotels and accommodation facilities in those areas where we actually don't have or haven't yet tapped into what the tourism potential of the area is. So we have a much broader and extensive development plan that looks at, firstly, enhancing the tourism infrastructure we have in places where that exists, but also looking at how we plan for where that doesn't exist, and the Wild Coast is a specific region in point. So there are a number of master plans that are looking, for example, at the developments in the Northern Cape around the SKA and how we connect the scientific research with telling a tourism story. that drives visitors into less visited regions, let's call it that. And looking specifically then at how we work in the Eastern Cape, where there is a lot of untapped potential. So it starts with developing master plans that will be comprehensive development. And the example that I often use around master plans is that in Gauteng, 20 years ago, there was no Cradle of Humankind. And in fact, there was a master plan that looked at holistic development of that area, which saw the development of tourism facilities from 67, way back in 1999, to 411, as we are currently sitting. So it's using that model of a master plan that looks at comprehensive development to work in the Northern Cape and the Eastern Cape. And then our model is really around enhancing what exists in other areas. And it's a very simple idea. You take those things that are iconic, that stand out, and you build around them. And that's really what the plan is for those regions. So it was not covered in this necessarily because, as you correctly said, Honorable Chair, it was not a commitment that was made in that financial year. But there is extensive work that has been done as it relates to this area of work. The work that we do in terms of signage, Honorable Member, is, you're correct, not related to directional signage. So the one that directs you how to get to places falls under many, many different authorities. If it's on a national road, then the competent authority would be SANRAL, that's responsible for the signage. If it is on a provincial road or is within a local authority, it depends on whether the province will be responsible for it or whether the local authority is responsible for it. Where we do assist is tourism businesses to actually assist them to put up their directional signage through a committee that is run by the Department of Transport. So the directional signage isn't necessarily our competency to deal with, but it is something that we facilitate where there are iconic tourism attractions in the space. We deal with what is called interpretive signage. So when you visit a site and there is a story to be told at that particular site and you see a board that is up that tells you the story of the place, that's the type of signage that we deal with which is interpretive signage. And that's particularly important because we work with the different authorities to ensure that the story that's being told at that site is in fact scientifically or historically or culturally accurate. And that's the difference between the work that we do in terms of signage and the work that is done by the Department of Transport.
Honorable Chairperson, the opportunities that come from some of these programs, the training, chefs across the whole country. We do get a challenge sometimes with the Northern Cape. We get the youth in and the youth drop out to a point where there's nobody left in the program. We've had to close one of the programs because of that. But all the provinces partake in all of this. So if you see, as an example, the graduations that sometimes are in the news and so on, they are across all the provinces. And the partners are also coming from the provinces in terms of the experiential part of the learning that these youth go through. In terms of the incubators, our assessment was that it will not be financially sustainable for us to have incubators across the country. So we have remodeled that, which allows us to have a centralized approach to support, and then when there is a concentrated group that needs on-site support, then we send those people to provide that support. So that's how we're going to operate this in the future. The fund, we go out to try and market it as much as we can, but it depends on who is applying. So the person applies, the person could apply being in Gauteng, being in Eastern Cape, being in Limpopo, being in Northern Cape, and all of them are considered. So it's really, where is this coming from? The DDG was not, she was speaking cautiously. Hole in the wall, there's a big proposal in the wall. Big proposal, which is currently under consideration. The provincial government is part of that. The feedback that we get from the investors, we take this to the investors, they are saying they just want that 7 kilometer stretch of road, just that 7 kilometers, to be done. That's all they're asking for. So they are willing and they want to. The people that are going through these market access programs, the 390-something that we talked about, they are coming from all the provinces. They're coming from all the provinces. In fact, if you look at the smaller business categories with regards to Minister's Lilizela Awards, the Eastern Cape has got most of those. It's not because of anything else, but it's because of the support that is actually provided. Going to Limpopo.
One question is, what is when are the wings return? Do you also know why? Because I have a problem. When the process has been trained, that you will not.
Sorry, Chairperson. When you are doing this training, are you placing them and make some monitoring? Because as a government, with all these trainings, but you don't place them. So the value of whatever was being planned and tried to be implementing it, become vivid when you train a person but you don't place that person to that particular trained capacity given to that particular person.
Thank you, Honorable. Okay. Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will use the example of the chefs program. We would take them to the classroom. When they come out of the classroom, we have a partnership with industry. They go straight into hotels for experiential learning. And they will go through that process until the program is ended. But after that, it becomes a labor market issue, which absorption would depend on availability of jobs in the market. The absorption rate of the chefs is satisfactory, which says that there is demand. So it's the reason why we continue to do it, because there is demand for it. But once you've got that particular skill, and some of the things that we are looking at in the future is incorporation of entrepreneurship training into these programs that we're running. But once you've got that skill as a chef, a professional chef, you can go and do something of your own easily. And I'm using that example because we all need food, we all will eat food, and it is always going to be in demand. So that's the approach that we take. But we are very happy with the absorption rate of this youth, and they are actually getting out of unemployment. So we'll continue to do that. Then the other element that I was going to Limpopo, I will just use three examples for Limpopo. Mapungubwe, with the understanding that youth, and in particular learners, need to understand the historical heritage significance, but also experience it. We are building the dormitory. We're building a dormitory there. Which will also have other elements of like backpackers and so on, so that they are able to. And then when you go to between Mieshe and Mdidite. That area there, we are working with SANParks and Environmental Affairs to open a new gate that takes the access from Giani, because there is no access there. The next access is towards Malamlele. Then we are also putting a wild activity hub in the Paraburo Gate. So there are some issues that we are dealing with there with the municipality with regards to issues of infrastructure and so on. But those are the I can share these types of stories for the whole country. They are there elsewhere. 2 weeks ago, there's a project we've been working on for a long time, trying to get rights for the place to be declared some site that can have a beach resort that will be built. It's in the Ilembe district municipality in KZN. It's a big, big, big project. So we now have gotten authorization for the use of that land. Those are the kinds of things that we are supporting the various communities and the business people to be able to open up those types of spaces. I must say we are very happy to hear that we have one customer who's fully converted and who is going to be traveling the country. And that's Honorable Olifant. We are very happy. We're very happy about that. The kinds of experiences she described demonstrate the variety of products that we've got in the country. So you've got places where there are people willing to pay as much as 40,000 rand per night in this country. But you do have places where you can pay 600 rand. There are people who would want to hear that elephant roar. That lion roar. So they pay just to go and sleep at a place where this lion would roar. They start doing that shortly after midnight. Yes. Limpopo, you've got a place like that in Tzaneen. In Tzaneen, there's a place like that. So there are people who would want that type of experience. When we were going, Minister, I think we were going to, I can't remember whether it was going to Mwamito, Minister and I used that particular place. And they roar, like really roar. And that's part of the experience. Other people don't want cell phone connectivity. They don't want TVs, not even a radio. They just want to listen to nature. So that's part of the experience. When we go and sell it, we sell that as well. Say we will take you out of this concrete jungle and put you in a real jungle. So those are some of the issues. But overall, I think we welcome the constructive feedback.
Thank you, DJ. Minister, want to say something? And then
just a few little things. Thank you, honourable members. That roaring of the lion. I mean, it was a tape recording, you know, to make it feel. Wasn't a real lion. Just to make you feel you're out in the bush. No. Yeah. Really. But you didn't see it, right?
No, I didn't.
So how do you know it wasn't a tape recording? No. I think Victor's point is right. So that's, people want authentic experiences. They want to hear the lion, smell the lion, see the lion, and we offer that, you know. And people will come a long way to experience that. And it's, you know, we shouldn't. Although we have a lot of things to offer in tourism, not only wildlife, but if you look at some of our competitive countries, competing countries, they don't have it. It's Southern Africa largely that has the big five. And so one of our big selling points for South Africa is, of course, I mean, we know that Kenya, Tanzania, Botswana, they all have Zimbabwe, they have wildlife, and they have fantastic game reserves. But we have these excellent game reserves plus many other things. And we have a big range of game reserves. So what you see at Addo Elephant Park and what you see at the Kruger National Park is not quite the same. Addo Elephant Park, we talk about the big five or even the big seven, because you can do the great white sharks and you can see the southern right whale. So it's a different experience. And if you go to the Khalakhadi National Park, different experience once again. So we offer such a range of experiences just in our national parks. But our big selling point is you come to South Africa, you do national parks, we've got the scenic beauty, we have the beaches, we have the cities, we have the shopping experience, we have the food and the wine. So it's a package. And let me get to just a couple of brief points to pick up on. The DG said that the plans for the hole in the wall are quite advanced. Actually, they're very advanced, and that is a hotel to be constructed at Coffee Bay. And that's, all the plans are pretty much through. The EIA has been passed. I think the people who want the consortium are still looking for an investment partner, but we anticipate the building to be starting this year, this 2019. Am I right, Shamila? Are we confident of that? Pretty confident. Okay, but it's advanced. But other things in the Eastern Cape things that we know have already happened or are going to happen. We will be launching in Craddock, the Garden of Remembrance, in a couple of months from now for the Craddock 4. And so I haven't been there myself, but I'm told it's a very beautifully done. And that's we would just refer to that as heritage tourism or even liberation tourism. It's a very important part of our tourism offer is the story of South Africa, in the same way as the cradle of humankind is the story of all of humankind. Mapungubwe is the story of ancient kingdoms. So we have many stories to tell, but we've got to make those stories be told in a more creative manner. We've got to enhance those places that tourists can really have a profound experience when they go to those places. Bobby Hans Kloof, another site in the Eastern Cape. We, with support of the European Union, there's a leopard trail. We call it a leopard trail, but there's a trail which doesn't only include leopards, because it's a very beautiful part of our country, but less visited. And so, this hiking trail will make it a much more attractive proposition, if you like. That's on the Eastern Cape. We can obviously, as Victor said, we can talk about projects in all of the provinces, and which we'll spend the whole day. Robben Island, specifically, I want to pick up on. Chairperson, we would love to take honorable members to Robben Island to do the oversight work, but that's on the assumption that you'll be back with us in after May, after the elections. Oh, you won't be. But, okay, if you're not, there's a young man here called Jeremy Cronin. He lives in Cape Town. He'd be quite happy to take you on a date to Robben Island and take you across on the ferry. I'll join for that matter, because at our age we don't get dates very easily. But something. I mean, obviously, we have spent some money on Robben Island, and you've heard it. I must say, and I'm glad Deputy Minister Cronin is here, because it isn't the kind of profound experience that we believe it should be and could be. And so we need to put much more, we need to invest more resources into Robben Island. It falls under the Department of Arts and Culture. The Robben Island Museum is appointed by the Department of Arts and Culture, Minister of Arts and Culture, the body that is responsible for Robben Island, but there are many, many creative ideas to make it come alive and to make that experience a really memorable experience. So we will be giving more attention to Robben Island in the years to come. And then finally, just on the signage thing, the DG and DDG have explained, but that it's not us responsible for the signs on the national roads, etc. But these are interpretive signs. But I must say, we're moving into a digital era where one day with your phone, even even, how can I put this politely, less young people like ourselves, you know, who do have cell phones. In the future, and you can already do it to some extent, you will have a WhatsApp on your cell phone, and you'll point your phone, you know, at a number of statues and monuments, and you'll hear the whole story on your phone. Even today, you can actually take pictures of animals and flowers, and they will be identified with you, for you, on your phone, before you have to take your book, of flowers, or your book of wild animals. But now, if you have a picture, you can actually identify what animal it is, what flower it is. But the world is moving in that direction, that more and more information will be readily available on your phone. But I think our challenge is not only make the information available, but if there's a statue of Albertine, let me use an example, and I'll end there. The statues that, as part of the project of Dalí Tambo, that were at Freedom Park or close to Freedom Park in Pretoria, have now all been moved to the Cradle of Humankind near Marupeng. And the numbers of people that are going there to see those statues, you wouldn't believe it. But all of those statues have a story, whether it's Albertina and Walter Sisulu, or whether it's a statue of Albert Luthuli. And the same thing is, we're working at the moment with Dalí Tambo to get the story told, that in, you know, on your phone, so that you can go to any one of the statues and you can hear the story on your phone about that statue. So I think our challenge is to not only grow tourism, is to grow tourism, but to make tourism a much more meaningful experience, including for our own people. It's not just about attracting international tourists. And so we're very serious about, doing whatever we can to get South Africans who don't necessarily have the money to see and experience the things that we have to offer, to create packages to something wrong, to make it possible for them to go to Robben Island, for example, or to go to Mapungubwe. There's something, honourable members, fundamentally wrong about somebody living in Limpopo, close to Mapungubwe, but because of their economic circumstances, they just can't go there. Or somebody living here in Cape Town, and their dream is to go to Robben Island one day, but they can't afford to go there. So we are working with SA Tourism to, develop packages that allows all South Africans to, not to do everything, but to do some things that they are currently not able to do. It is the new gold, if you like. I mean, one can describe it as that, but that gold has to be polished all the time. We've got to make sure that we can't just take it for granted. We've got to make the experience a better experience all the time. We've got to improve our destination all of the time and the various parts of destination South Africa. And then we have to market it and market it well. The president is putting a lot of emphasis, and correctly, to say, well, we're not doing a bad job of marketing. We have a great offer, but we make it, because of our visa regime, it's difficult for people to come to South Africa, then they go to other countries instead. So we're very serious about addressing some of the visa constraints that still remain there. And then, of course, safety of tourists. We think that's a very important component as well. In our current financial year, 1,450, and Jeremy, that is also part of the EPWP program, the tourism safety monitors, and they'll be placed at various sites around the country to make those sites, to at least assist in making certain areas a lot safer for tourists. Thank you.
Minister,
thank you. I will tell them when I'm alone. Minister, I want to talk about the vulnerable that you just talked about. You understand me when I say vulnerable. Mm-hmm. The last time when I was there, the drop off to the entire place, it's about to end. Now I ask myself, how do you handle the disabled people? Because at least let the disabled people come nearer to be dropped near the door. because you have to work, I don't know, is it 2 kilos or 1 kilometer? At least when you get in there, then you have fallen at least a 5-something off your body. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. Yes. Honorable Chairperson, thank you. We do run a program of universal accessibility. Even in some of these things that we're talking about, the interpretive signage, we take into account aspects of people with disability related to visual and so on. Now, there are areas that we identified, a couple of areas we identified, this was the pilot phase. We did very intense audit of what would be the requirements. And out of those audits, we are now commencing with the implementation in some of these different sites that we're talking about. That is when it comes to government sites. When it comes to other sites, which whether it's hotels and so on, as part of the grading standard, universal accessibility is included. So you would then see whether the place is graded for universal accessibility or not. And when you book, then you would, and it counts in their favor if they have actually done that. It's a global problem. When we started with this program, it was because the UN wanted to have a conference, global conference for people with disability. There was no city that could accommodate all these people that were going to come to such a conference. And we looked at this and we said, well, it looks like it's much more of a competitive issue. There's a social aspect to it, but you will be a lot more competitive because it's not just someone born or maybe due to an accident and so on. It's a mothers who are expectant mothers, they have special needs. It's mothers with small children, a mother that has got two twins or triplets and so on. Navigating that space becomes very, very difficult. It's elderly people who are on their walking sticks. They need the same type of support. So we have got a strategy around that comprehensively in terms of how we are dealing with it going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to thank the Minister for availing himself on this busy day. We know that you have to go and look for your suit and check whether your suit is right or not tomorrow. Sorry. So I want to thank you the Minister for availing yourself and your officials. Otherwise, he said, no, it's a busy day, also it's a busy, busy from now to May.
But you and I, we don't need the hairdresser, we just polish our hair.
Exactly. Other Guano?
I'm so interested in the plan of the head of the department. He said they make an audit. So, you know, when a person is talking, he raises some more questions. My question is, how many government sites, the outcome of the audit, what was it?
I'm sure we can provide that information. In writing. There's lots of sites, including parks and all that. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let me welcome the Minister of Public Works and the Deputy Minister of Public Works, but we can break for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Nothing outside? I'm sure people outside, there are committees here. Dresses is used to the fashion designers. Tomorrow, red carpet is waiting for them. I can see now red carpet is around. So let me welcome the minister and the deputy minister. Minister, the item here, the members want to listen for your progress reports on the executive undertakings made by you on the policy debate on budget vote number 11 for the Department of Public Works held on the 4th of May 2016. Minister can do the overview or can present the case, and over to you, Minister. Thanks.
Thanks, the chairperson of the select committee.
Sorry, Minister, maybe you were not here when we introduced ourselves. My name is Dumisani Kumbi. I'm the chairperson of the select committee. I'm a permanent delegate from the Western Cape. Originally, I'm from Mambondweni in the Eastern Cape. Members can introduce themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Gladys Woolifant. I'm a permanent delegate of this committee, and I'm representing the Northern Cape.
Bunadi Matime is my name. Member of the committee, member of the NCOP, representing Limpopo Province.
Thank you, Jefferson. Good morning to everybody. My name is Tavi Soana. I'm a permanent delegate from the Eastern Cape. I'm part of this committee.
Thank you, Minister, for delaying your help. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The honorable members of the committee, the Deputy Minister, the senior management of the Department of Public Works, and ladies and gentlemen, we are a delegation of the Deputy Minister, the DG, the head of the Property Management Trade Entity, the senior manager who's dealing with the leases in terms of our properties. We have the DDG who's responsible for facilities management. Who else do I forget? Or we have the chief director who's responsible for the prestige portfolio. Mabani Foot. Kubano. And Moses Taylor responsible for?
Disposals.
For disposals. The others are from the Ministry Advisory Team and Liaising Officer. Thank you. Onke Mcho and Mpo. Where is Mpo? There is also Tando Wababa. There is Sabelo Mali and the Chief of Staff. George Mudume. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Let me first say that we always take very seriously the role of parliamentary oversight and of this particular committee in particular, holding the executive to and the officials to account remains a critical cornerstone of our democracy. While the officials will present a detailed response to the issues and questions raised by the committee, but in relation to specific comments made in 2016, I can confirm the following. In relation to utilizing our empty building for student accommodation, a list of suitable buildings in proximity to higher education and training institution was drawn up. A joint task team, that is Public Works and Higher Education and Training, was put in place. And a draft MOU was developed. You'll understand that this undertaking means lots of money from the side of higher education. they need to budget properly for that. And most of the time they would say, fine, we've identified the buildings, but where do we get lots of money? And you would remember that they are competing interests. When you were saying tourism needs more money, somebody will tell you that education needs more money. And you will find that, if I'm right, the last count was saying we're running short of how many? 250 beds in the universities. No. So 250,000 beds. We're running short of the beds in the universities. And it's not just going to be within a year or 2 years. You need a very long-term program. So in relation to the commitment to identify vacant properties for letting out, the following measures have been taken. A letting out legal framework has been developed with the National Treasury. And the evaluation of the criteria for letting out the proposals seek to empower, in particular, the blacks, women, youth, and those with disabilities. You would remember that these are the groups which have been excluded by the previous regime in the property space. And the property space is still very conservative, still controlled by the boys of the old order. So that's why we're mentioning these. And it's also not going to be easy for them because they need huge monies to enter into that space. Hence, we're looking at institutions like the PIC, you mentioned all of them, but you can see now PIC is under strain. Once there are these investigations and everything, it's very difficult to be able to talk proper business with them. We hope that that's going to be corrected and later on we'll go back into. So as well as Chairperson promoting the localization of the suppliers, the first batch of the properties will be advertised on an open tender this month. And remember, tenders are a very sensitive area where we're not supposed to be next to it as politicians. But once things are wrong, we have to answer a lot. So it's going to be advertised, and then we'll see what happens. In relation to the security and the maintenance of the vacant properties, our strategy is twofold: to identify properties for letting out, and the development of the implementation of a planned maintenance strategy. But I must add, it's becoming very, it's imperative that we consider very seriously to sell some of the properties. That is very clear, that some of the properties have to be sold. Because we can't manage them. They've become a liability. If you sit with an empty property, unfortunately you have to pay the rates and all other related things and so on. Though it's empty, it's a big liability when you're talking about buildings. But also we need to be very careful. You don't sell something, then 2 or 3 years down the line you need it. I always mention the example of Mpumalanga. A land parcel was sold at 3 million. 2, 3, 4 years, that land parcel was needed. It was already 11 to 13 million. So let me be upfront. There have been delays. This is partly as a result of many changes that took place during the period I myself spent a year in sports and recreation. But it also reflects our limited success in bedding down the capacity and programs in the department, rather than depending on the executive authority to drive things. You see, I might earn a wrath of other people when I say this thing. Fortunately, I'm working with a deputy minister who say you must just say it like it is. You see, part of the problem is when you have an executive member, when he or she is changed, it's like everything must start from scratch, as if people are coming from different parties. I think that's what it's destroying us in the implementation. That's why my argument has always been things must be bedded in the officials of the department, not in the ministries. Okay, you can come with the vision, but the actual implementation must be with the officials, because ministers or politicians come and go, and the department remains. And that's very, very important. Please allow me to conclude with some remarks regarding the bigger picture. The bigger picture in relation to the public works and the property management trade entity. In my presentation to the NCOP on October 26th, I stated that, and I'm quoting myself, when I announced the turnaround strategy in 2012, it was based on two pillars. I said it's zero tolerance of fraud and corruption and improving the way we do business, which required the full operationalization of the property management trade entity. And in relation to the broader commitment, I can report as follows, because I think I must say it, even if it's not as big. It's a matter which keeps on nagging us, as Parliament, as even as the executive, the issue of corruption and so on. On the first pillar, which is zero tolerance of fraud and corruption, during 2018, we reported and implemented recommendations from the SIU, the Special Investigation Unit, arising from an investigation into the leasing portfolio. The SIU mandate was extended, and they are currently investigating emergency day-to-day maintenance. After our own internal investigation unit flagged 16,000, not 1,600, 16,000 suspicious transactions. Those are payments. Sometimes you just pay without proper papers and invoices, and so you don't know what was being paid and so on and so on. Sometimes it's one company repeated payments and so on. At the same time, that's a second issue, the Public Service Commission is assisting us in investigating irregular appointments. I said in one forum in Parliament, 684 to be exact, posts were filled in. 684 posts were filled in within a period of less than 6 months. There are 365 days. On average, it means two posts were filled in every day, including the weekends. Then when I came in, I started investigating that. We're still waiting for the report from the PSC. But all these things have ended as enemies. But we have to do it. And my worry was the critical posts of people in property, in the built environment, those posts were never filled in. That was my worry. But it's filled in by the other things. Some of them are not even in the structure. On a second pillar, improving the way we do business through the operationalization of the PMT, the entity has now been ring-fenced from the general operations of the public works. And the picture is, however, mixed. Colleagues, I think it's very important that we understand this. Public works has been treated as a general department for too long. And that was unfortunate. Public works is not that. Public works is a highly technical department. It's a property management. 75% of what public works does relates to construction, relates to the maintenance of the building and disposal of the building. And if you look into construction, that's a huge technical thing, construction, where you need the built environment engineers, you can mention all of them. And if you're talking about maintaining these buildings, that they are proper, including buildings in Parliament, giving all the department's offices, it means you have to lease that. Leasing is a very complex process. It's not just like going into a shop and grabbing something. You also need property people, trained in property, property lawyers, economics and so on. But as also part of the investment, you have to talk about investment in your own building. Which ones are a liability? Which one can still give you money? Facilities management. To manage the facilities is a huge thing. It's a huge thing. And if you look into the stock of the buildings of government, they are old. Because there was a particular period where maintenance was neglected. I think when we took over, we didn't have a crisis. Now, after 25 years, some of those buildings might have been 30, 40 years. But now, after 25 years, they're starting to be 70, 80 years old. And old buildings are very problematic in maintenance. And somebody said to me, wait, let me tell you, what you see on the surface, it's not the most challenging. What is most challenging in terms of maintenance of your infrastructure, it's what is underground. So what I'm trying to say is, in fact, the biggest threat is what that lady, Nyeledi Makubela, is dealing with. She is the head of the facilities management. She's a built environment professional. It's the biggest challenge. And I must say it, one of the problems, departments will tell you that we don't have money for maintenance. We don't just maintain. We maintain, we do some of the things being paid for by the various departments. Some are even failing to pay rent. We have even taken to the treasury that particular issue. People might see public workers chaotic, but you might find that the client departments are also culprits. But I thought that I must talk about that. Now, what we have done, we have ring-fenced what deals with the property management trade entity. All those functions, and the department deals with the policy and regulatory functions and the support functions of the finance and so on and so on. So we have certainly not made progress that I hoped for when I addressed the NCOP in 2016. The need to fully implement a sustainable financial model for the PMTE therefore remains very critical. The slow progress has reflected in challenges at the operational level. Events in the second half of 2018 found the department and PMT wanting. Substandard and unsafe buildings and lack of planned maintenance has unleashed concerns from the clients and their employees. In Parliament, poor presentations have exposed an unreliable data and poor planning resulting in various orders and projects coming in over the budget and out of time and often with serious defects. You see, there's a fight with other people. You don't give us business. You give them business and then you deal with substandards. Substandards, sodi work. All you see is that people just want money. But if you don't give the work, you are told that you are doing down the empowerment issues. But if you look into the standards on some of them, not all of them. By the way, there's a case in point. The Polokwane court, which started at 300 million in construction, ended close to R1 billion. And those are established companies. The same with Mpumalanga. But if you go into a court which was done in Joburg, in Boysens, on time, within budget, it looks very nice. At the beginning, it looks nice. You don't know after some years because the defects, you don't see them at that particular time. But it was done by a black contractor. So corruption knows no color, guys. Yes. So it is with this in mind that in 2018 we embarked upon a major intervention for the remaining period of this administration. We have established a high performance center, we call it the HPC, in the project management office under the head of the PMT, which is then Dade Maruch. A team of this high performance center is a team of experienced built environment professionals. They are sourced from the other state entities and with the assistance of the CPE and professional councils to work with the existing management to provide coordination, oversight, and ensure proper reporting at the levels of the property management trade entity and accountability that comes with that. I don't know what they say in English, but in Xhosa bathi ukugula kwakho impilo kum okanye ubonakala kwenye ukulunga kwenye. There's something in English. One man's meat is another man's poison. You see, as ESCOM is having all its problems and so on, we want to go and steal experienced engineers there. that is the because part of the problem, we have very few highly technical people. Unless I'm wrong, Dr. Maruch, if I'm right, we only had one qualified electrical engineer. Am I right? In public works, in the department, with huge property management, huge facilities management. This will provide us with an early warning system, this HPC, where problems are going to arise and the flexibility and agility to respond. You see, we have taken these people from outside, highly qualified people who are used to maintaining the malls, constructing the big malls and the big projects and so on. They are not going to replace those who are inside. The further benefits include better utilization of the resources we do have, particularly some 70 candidates on the Young Professionals Program, some of whom will be attached to these professionals in the High Performance Center. You know, the young people who come very enthusiastic to think that they are going to change things, they get very disappointed. Sometimes they are sidelined, they are told, who are you, and so on and so on. Or they are not given the proper jobs. So we are going to attach them to this, 70 of them, the young people, and they are qualified. Except that they are not certificated because they have not gone through that internship where they are put in proper projects. So we'll be able to put them there. We think that we can be able to make it. If you remember when we talked about a project in public works, when I joined the public works for the first time, 7 years of negative audit with 2 years of disclaimers, how did we turn it around? We employed about 120 young graduates on a contract basis, put highly qualified chartered accountants and accountants. They headed them. They were able to do our books. As back as 2001, they were able to correct a lot of things. We're not yet having a clean audit, but we're almost there. And we think that these young people, if they are supervised by the right people, they will be able to help us on some of the things. Moreover, the newly advertised professional appointments, part of the process of operationalizing the PMTE, when they arrive, instead of stepping into a vacuum, they will immediately find in place a functioning and a coordinated system of programs, project management, which will facilitate, enhance, and boost their contribution to the business. Colleagues and honorable members, public works is a technical department and it must be run like business. This, the biggest property portfolio, private portfolio in this country is Growth Point. Public Works is 10 times bigger than Growth Point. But to think that you're going to run that business along the departmental lines, you're wasting your time. You have somebody to come and fix your house, Chairperson. They fix your house, they go and claim, they get their money. 2 weeks back, you find that the same problem is facing you. They do the fixing, they come back, and then they get their money. They would even, in our township language, they even steal some of the parts so that they are able to come back, you see. And you can't have somebody who's not an engineer to supervise the engineers. We need engineers inside to be able to do equality assurance of the work which has been done. So, honorable members, my intention there in providing the response which goes beyond the scope of the specific issues raised by the committee is intentional, because I want you to understand the context of this. So I chose to focus on the systemic challenges faced by the department and the PMT, and our response is in the form of this HPC to give assurance that our many clients that Public Works is striving to overcome the limitations and to improve the service delivery and enhance the client experience. Moreover, addressing the operational challenges with some agency will also provide a more stable basis for the operationalization of this property management trade entity, and in turn enhance the capacity to address the committee's concerns in relation to the better maintenance and the utilizations of the government properties. Without any waste of time, I will hand over to the DG and the officials who are going to do a presentation.
Thank you, Minister. Thanks.
Mr. Maro. Chairperson, honorable members, Minister, DM, DG, and honorable guests. We will be responding to the three issues that the committee has asked us. We have made a presentation available. We will not necessarily go to every slide. I think the Minister has done a good job in summarizing some of the key issues related to those commitments.
Thank you very much, DG. Exactly. I'm saying that Minister has covered, so just not to read.
Yes.
Talk to it.
Yeah. So the first two elements will be handled by Mr. Diagavanda, and the last one will be handled by Ms. Nyeleti Makubela. So I will ask them to go and summarize the key issues in the presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, members of the committee, Minister, Deputy Minister, and colleagues. As indicated, I have not given the comprehensive presentation made by our Minister. Mine is just to highlight a few issues for your edification. This just gives us an indication of what the PMT is, its key components, the three key businesses being real estate investment management, facilities management, and then the management of properties called real estate management. We also have a construction project management wing and then a unit to establish our asset registry. In respect of the most significant challenge that covers items 1 and 2 of the questions, it relates to the state properties. So currently, this gives you a reflection that we deal with acquisitions, we deal with utilization of state properties, and we deal with disposals. In net effect, we account for 10.3 billion of income, but very important is the expenditure side, the holding cost of properties. So I want to focus on rates and taxes, 1.3 billion, as our minister indicated, the issues of lights and water, and those are 2.6 billion that we'll have to address in the way in which we manage our properties. The last is 4.5 billion, and that is developing properties for use by the state with less reliance on private sector. I went through this slide to give you an indication of the key areas of the business, so I'm not going to go into that. Currently, we've identified 5,720 has been surplus properties. We've categorized them so that we're able to attract investors and ensure utilization. If we look at vacant land on potential for farms, farms could be from agriculture to solar farms or wind farms. And we're looking at about 5,187, and the cost of just paying rates and taxes on that is quite significant. If we look at office-type buildings, we don't have many surplus. This is 142, and these are in very poor state and need significant investment and use for other purposes, because they are in areas where the state does not necessarily need them immediately. However, in Johannesburg, it could be converted for our own use as a government. If you look at residential properties, and our minister was alluding to, the biggest burden and headache is our residential properties that are not used by the state. So this does not include properties in Cape Town or Pretoria that are used by the state. These are properties that could be from Ulundi to Amtata, Durban, and many of the areas that are no longer used by the state. They remain vacant, they could be part of the properties illegally occupied. Okay. And then we have airstrips. In addition to that, we have small harbors and coastal properties, which we have. In relation to student accommodation, the minister has, I think, covered all the areas. So mine is to this day focusing on the fact that, to provide some detail, from our engagement with our colleagues in the Department of Higher Education and Training, which has 24 universities on 223 campuses, our projects, what we have identified is the challenge of universities 200,000 beds and TVET colleges 100,000. The first phase is to look at 12 institutions, and we've listed them, which are operate on 66 campuses. Now, this is a combination of universities and TVET colleges, okay, where the student accommodation is the most acute. Now, we, as Public Works in those engagements, have identified 68 properties, approximately 25 vacant land, and the remainder vacant apartment buildings or standalone houses, and we've enumerated that for you in the various provinces, what we have identified jointly as being suitable, okay, or having the potential to develop student accommodation. To date, 17 feasibility studies are due for completion, so it's a work done by professionals that looks at the site, the town planning issues, the type of student accommodation required, and whether in fact those projects can indeed successfully be executed on the properties we've identified. So that's what we mean by feasibility studies. Minister has alluded to that the change in executive has impacted significantly in public work, not just in this area, and I think in all areas. And that significant delay and uncertainty is why there is perhaps a lack of progress between the commitments of 2016 and our presentation here today. Okay. I think in terms of the interventions, under the new executives, the priorities were re-identified, the task teams re-established, so as to pursue the task of delivering on student accommodation. And for all intents and purposes, the key driver is the Department of Higher Education and Training, and Public Works is there to provide professional technical support, as well as to make its land and properties available. We had a confirmation of the properties required that was done and should be accomplished by the end of this month. The MOU to regulate our relationship partners and key responsibilities at the end of March. Then the funding options, etc., will take a little bit longer, but we have proposed from our side that they could perhaps use the triple T model instead of relying on, given the constraints in the fiscus, or what we have proposed is simpler, build, operate, and transfer, which empowers property developers and investors, and especially black property entrepreneurs, or an outright purchase of a facility that may be there. In terms of the capacity we as public works take to the table, I think I've enumerated six. I just want to add, we also bring in from the property management side, is that we've engaged with all property owners in the state business area, whether it's leasing in or companies utilizing our properties, since July 2018, and they have shown significant interest as property developers and investors. Okay. So the kind of skills we have provided or we are making available to the Department of Higher Education and Training in respect of the 24 prioritized institutions for phase one is this kind of technical skills that we have readily available. Now, in respect of addressing it, we are, as Minister had indicated, we are advertising those properties so that private sector could also come and make proposals. In fact, we've had many that have been approaching us since 2016 to develop student accommodation. So they too can then approach the Department of Higher Education and Training based on the use of our properties for that purpose. We want to ensure that any awards are issued by ourselves to avail our properties and higher education in respect of those matters it is competent to deal with. In terms of the desired impact, and I think the key driver here being the Department of Higher Education and Training, we just put included a building that is within close proximity to the University of Witwatersrand and our property that is a potential for student accommodation. It is structurally sound, but in a derelict state. It requires significant investment. And there are quite a few black entrepreneurs who are willing to invest and develop in that property. So I just thought in addition, there will be revenue to the state. It will reduce the holding cost. They've not offered to buy it. They want to lease it long term and run it as a business to provide student accommodation. That will increase even the asset value for the state. The next question that was posed, and I think commitment undertaken, is the letting out of state property. I think when Minister addressed the committee in 2016, we had done significant work with National Treasury, and we were on the verge of translating and approving procedures and policies that would have enabled us to have let out our surplus vacant properties. And as indicated, the change in executive was one of the significant contributors to a delay. I saw the focus on this year. Just as an example, currently many of our properties, it's common knowledge, are let out for almost nothing. Some are paying us 48 rands per annum and running a business of a turnover of 100 million with assets of 150 million. And yet we have to pay 200,000 in rental taxes. Just with a review of 48 leases, we've increased revenue by 17.9 million. Okay. And all we have to do is make sure that whatever is taken from us must exceed the holding cost that we have to pay. So we've introduced certain norms, and I think I'm going to go to that part of my presentation. And that is, we finalized the list. We are in the final stages. We work very closely with National Treasury. We've already conducted all our provincial workshops with our businesses that use our property and those who lease properties to us. Okay. In fact, our final circular is ready. We were hoping to sign it this week, okay, between Mr. Marocca, the DG, and myself, given that we've now got the concurrence of Treasury and all these matters. So we are on track to advertise our properties, both in our website, the e-portal of Treasury when it's available, the tender bulletin, and in national and strategic provincial newspapers. The framework, I think Minister has already alluded to, is an open process. Even a renewal is done in an open process, because there's a formal application, there's due consideration, okay, and the list of renewal is published before it is considered on a website for any objections, so that it's done in an open manner, given that there are some businesses running for almost 100 years on our property, and vital jobs depend on the, on those businesses. So we have a procedure to deal with the existing tenants in an open, fair, and transparent manner. We also have a backlog of applicants, some as much as 10 years old. These are significant investments. If approved, would create significant jobs. And they have not been processed for a variety of reasons. It was a period of high turnover and instability of leadership, both executive as well as administrative. And then the new applicants, they are knocking on our doors, whether it's student accommodation, whether it's a fishing business, or whether it's a solar farm, they are knocking on our doors. As Minister indicated, we do not treat all applications the same. We cater for from the individual to the micro business. Okay. And we are using figures like 1 million. If your business is less than 1 million, there's an application form and there's a criteria we evaluate, which is very different than you go higher up, very small businesses. So we went more than the current definition of small. Identified very small. Small business, the medium and large. So that we are able to process those applications differently. We also have dealt with, within the framework, that no property can ever be let out to anybody anymore for less than the holding cost. Okay. The escalation rate shall be prime plus 4%. Standard across the board to escalate annually. For micro businesses, we're just looking at the holding costs plus an annual turnover, an admin fee of 20%, and an escalation rate of 5%, at minimum. As those businesses grow and move higher up in terms of the categorization, then they will be charged differently. Rentals for tower boards, billers, servitudes, etc. It's just the annual escalation rate, of 5 plus 4, a base rental, not less than the rates and taxes, plus 20%, okay? Because it's very hard to quantify the amount of money made from billboards or towers, okay? And we have a standardized fee in the industry. But all other tenants will be paying a rental payable based on base rental plus a revenue share model and percentage and an escalation rate of prime plus 4%. Now this takes care of, we have listed companies operating in our properties, so they're able to pay us a percentage of that. The framework, as Minister indicated, deals with the key areas of empowerment, job creation, localization, use of small to medium and micro enterprises as suppliers, employment of local communities. We even went a step further and ensured that empowerment can include local businesses buying shares in the companies that invest and operate in specific areas. So there is legitimacy and localization even of the investment that will occur. We do make specific concessions for informal businesses. In some of our properties, some people only use them for 3 hours a day. They don't rent an entire building. In some places, they come and park a food truck and resell them to workers during a certain point. So they cannot be deemed to be responsible for the entire property. They only use them for fixed hours. So we've catered for that so that you could deal with, especially businesses that go to our harbor properties, they only come in the morning, put the goods, and they leave them out. So we catered for all such types. Okay. The key is, in the process, is there's an application, there's a proper creditors assessment for the variety of categories, there's an evaluation, and it's dealt with. Even businesses that are fair, we will still consider them further, right, depending on their viability. What we can't do is end up with the failed projects we have. We have given our property away for a hotel to be built. We are waiting 8 years later and there's no hotel. We have given our property for a lobster plant to be built. The IDC funds it for $23 million and there is no business operating. That means the local communities do not have the jobs that they were promised, both in the hotel or the lobster plant. Like that, we have examples. So we have to do due and proper diligence, irrespective of whether it's an individual or a large group. This is our framework and time frames. We're already at least 2 months behind, but I think with the 2 months adjustments, we'll be able to achieve this. I've dealt with the circular that's going to be issued. We also have a project to deal with our illegally occupied properties, in which we would be appointing private sector conveyances and valuers and real estate agents to ensure that the illegally occupied properties are regularized before the formal disposal process. Secondly, we are in the process of finalizing an approval for Minister to dispose permanently of houses. We are borrowing from the work done by the Eastern Cape Provincial Department as well as Gauteng in disposing of surplus houses. The key being giving the current occupants the right of first refusal. Okay. Secondly, they will be disposed at market-related prices, but also acknowledging that some have made significant investments in their property. So you can't treat all of them in a blanket manner. Okay. Thank you. I'll hand over to my sister, Diledi.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, Head of PMTE, and my colleagues. My name is Niledi Makubela. I'll be dealing with Section C, which is the maintenance strategy. I need to take a deep breath. Thank you so much. The first part of my presentation, Minister, has gone into great details. I won't bother you with that one. He spoke about the budget issues, the technical competence of the department. What I would like to highlight is that over the years, the department has been focusing mostly on injecting capital, like we were building, but we were not having maintenance plans to support the buildings that we built. So even those new structures that we have built are going down the drain. So I'm not sure what was the cause of that, but over the years that's what we have seen. The issue of aging infrastructure, Minister has already spoken about it. All these failures in the systems of the department has led us to run our maintenance in the mode called run to failure, meaning something must break down first before we go and fix. The boiler must stop working first before we send a contractor to go fix. The lights must burn, the aircon must stop working, which is the wrong way of doing things. And then our response to that, so these things will pack up and pack up and pack up until a building is at a standstill, and then we inject a project into that as a refurbishment. After the refurbishment, there is no maintenance strategy. And then we also found that clients have got 100,000 delegations where they can implement minor maintenance works for themselves. Now we found that certain clients are feeling that the 100,000 is small, they can do it themselves, they want more money, but certain clients are simply not interested. Some don't have the capacity to do so. So we have undertaken to actually maybe do a drive and speak to the clients, because some of these things they really can do, and they can alleviate the pressure from the Department of Public Works to concentrate on what it is that we're supposed to do.
These clients would be typically departments?
Client departments, yes. Yes, thank you, Jim. So the... Lately, I'm sure honourable members have heard that we're having a lot of issues around occupational health and safety, and then that has highlighted the weaknesses that exist within the department where that is concerned. We only have people that do the inspection, literally duplicating what the Department of Labour would do, but we don't necessarily have mechanisms on how, when they have gone out to do a inspection, how that information then feeds back into what is it that we do. So we'll find problems, yet we are doing something, but whatever we're doing, we're not necessarily addressing what the occupational health and safety guys would have found. This little picture, what we're trying to show is that right now we are operating mostly on the emergency mode, meaning we wait for things to break and then we fix. The plant maintenance thing that we do is the capital project. We want to move away from that. We want to move to the green side, where we have planned maintenance, where we have service contracts, where air conditioners are serviced periodically like you would a car. Before the car breaks down, you go and fix it. We want to implement the total facilities management. I'll go into detail on a later slide with total facilities management. Okay, so the department, to respond to the growing challenge of maintenance, the branch called facilities management is actually quite new. It was established in 2016. All along it was falling under property management at lower level, because obviously capacity follows strategy. So because the strategy of the department was never really about maintenance, or maintenance was not on top of the agenda in terms of where the department was going, so the response to maintenance was left at a very low level. Only now it's been highlighted. But as we are turning the department around in terms of how we want to do maintenance, when we try to strengthen, we find new problems. When Minister came, I think it was 2013, around the time, there was a big issue about the asset register. We needed to know what properties we have out there. After finding out what we bought, we needed to know the conditions of those assets. After finding the conditions of those assets, we needed to know what's inside those buildings. So the components of those of the facilities, we needed to know how many air conditioners, how many lifts are there, if we have boilers, if we have chillers, that kind of information, which is very crucial on how you can plan your maintenance strategy going forward. So we want to know, we are trying to establish, in fact we have done some work towards that, where we want the critical components of those buildings, like your lifts and your HVAC, to be able to communicate to us. So when the lift breaks, there should be a device on the lift that highlights that, listen, lift A at building B has now broken down or will break down, so that we can send help before actually the incidents that we have seen where people were locked in lifts happen again. So this is where we want to see ourselves. We want to see ourselves implementing a healthy mix of maintenance strategies. The emergency or the corrective maintenance strategy, we're never going to be able to get rid of in totality, because emergencies are such that they do happen once in a while. But that should form a minimal part of our operations if we do our plant maintenance correctly. The time-based maintenance, as I've indicated before, the condition-based maintenance, as I've indicated before, this is just a nice picture that is depicting what I have already said in terms of where we want to see ourselves in our maintenance strategy within the department. As I already indicated, the occupational health and safety issues have been highlighted by the recent developments. We had burning buildings. I don't know if honourable members have heard about the incidences at the Civitas building where the Department of Health is. So we want to develop a framework where between ourselves and the Department of Labour, we can have a protocol on how to operate. We cannot have a situation where a junior official, albeit very powerful because he's called an inspector, can walk into a building and just shut it down and leave a department like the Department of Health for a week without an office. And when you go and you look at the issues, as at fault as we may have been as public works, we believe that that building should not have been shut down. Also, the Department of Health has the same feeling, but he did it. And for a week, the Department of Health did not have headquarters. And that we're trying to establish how can we deal with this matter going forward, that when you do find that there are issues that need to be resolved, there's got to be better ways of doing it rather than shutting a department, unless you find live electricity or the building is burning or something of that catastrophic matter. We want to be able to digitize our compliance certificate. So when you walk into our building, the fact that it's occupational compliant should be displayed somewhere, and we should be able to retrieve that information on our ICT platforms. I've already spoken about the maintenance contract reform. Other thing that is becoming a bit of a problem is the capital projects. Our capital project pipeline is something that has been going on for a long time. Now, some of those projects may or may not necessarily be urgent anymore. So we want to reprioritize that capital list project to respond to whatever it is that is burning right now. So if there's buildings that we know at the current moment need the money, and there's another building that is in our capital pipeline, and does not necessarily need that urgent intervention, we should be able to swap it around rather than putting this new project into a later stage. By the time we fix it, then it's a bigger problem for us. As I've already indicated, honorable members, when we learn new things, we create another problem, but not necessarily a problem, but it just highlights how else we can improve our services to our client departments. We have been able to count how many lifts we have across the country in our buildings. We have approximately 1,000 lifts, but that lift in Johannesburg regional office, that's where we are worst hit. They've got 200 lifts, and almost 50% of their lifts are not in operation, and those that are in operation are intermittent. So the department, the regional office has gone out on tender to refurbish or replace some of those lifts. What we need to make sure is to make sure that there is a maintenance contract that comes along with it. What the department has done, we went to the National Treasury and obtained a deviation to implement what is called original equipment manufacturer maintenance contract. So if we have installed a lift from Schindler, then Schindler should be the one maintaining that particular lift, and Kony and Sigma, etc. It's their product, so they know their product very well. So previously we would install a lift and would have anybody to just come in and maintain the lift, and then later that would create problems for us. So that is a strategy that actually has been running for about 2 years. And it's yielding very good results. So we must just make sure that as and when we install new lifts, that strategy is implemented going forward. We also have boilers. I'm surprised Minister did not mention the issues of the boilers. The issue of the boilers, also we needed to count how many boilers we've got in the country, especially in our correctional services facilities. We have counted 90 boilers, and we have assessed about 56 of them so far. So we know the conditions. Obviously, some are very bad, and some need immediate attention, and some we can work on going forward. We are told that a boiler is a potential 10-kilometer radius bomb. So if that were to explode one day, we would have big issues. Like Minister said, we are working with one mechanical engineer who specializes in boilers. Yeah, but I'm not a mechanical engineer, I'm a civil engineer. So we are working with one mechanical engineer who's asking was assisting us in analyzing those reports, because we had gotten service providers to actually do the conditions assessments for us, and we will be approaching National Treasury on how to roll out the boiler plan. We will probably consider the use of triple P's as well, if there is not enough money in the fiscus for us to implement all what we need to do at a go. The HVAC, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system, that is still a problem. We still don't know how many we've got out there. So the problem here, we still have to find out what we've got, assess the conditions, so that the strategy that we come up with responds to what's really on the ground. So for now, all our new projects, that's where we make sure that whatever we put in them, there is a maintenance contract going forward. But to get those old information is still a bit of a challenge for now. So our medium interventions, like I said, is the implementation of total facilities management. So instead of the department having little contracts with 10,000 little service providers who does the small work, we're going to implement what we call the total facilities management. We'll have a bigger company. I don't even want to mention examples, but we have a bigger company that does facilities management, and under them they would have the minor contracts to do the certain works, whether it's on periodic side or whether it's response to emergencies. We have contracted the Developmental Bank of Southern Africa, the DBSA, to establish a panel for us, which is now standing. It's got a few companies in there, I think 20 in total, and we're going to use them to pilot the top 15 buildings that we have identified that are burning issues for the department at the moment. And we're hoping that will yield a good result for us. We still have a bit of a problem with our ICT systems. I will not be able to go into detail of the ICT, but that is a big part of how we're going to be able to respond to the maintenance challenge. We must have a functioning ICT system where calls are logged and calls are responded to, and the information of whether the work has been done and it has been done satisfactorily is recorded into that. The long-term strategy. We want to be able to have a central point where we have I don't know whether it's an individual or group of individuals who will be called the asset managers or portfolio manager, who will know everything that has to do with a particular facility, when it needs to be maintained, what needs to happen, when must we do a refurbishment, and all those kind of things. So that is part of the GRAP compliance of our immovable asset register that is run from a branch called RACE within the department. The desired impact, obviously, we want to improve the conditions of the portfolio to enable our client departments and ourselves to do better to discharge our service delivery mandates. We want to improve occupational health and safety compliance in our facilities. We want to mitigate the risk of shutdown. Like I already said, we've seen that with Civitas and a few other buildings in the recent past. And we want to improve our ability to manage our assets as a whole, from acquisition to disposal, which is called the asset life cycle management, costing and planning. Mr. Quintlood?
Okay. Well, I mean, the conclusion that is self-evident, I think, is for the committee chair to note our response to the three executive commitments that have been made in 2016. And then I think, I don't know what DG will also want to make concluding remarks, and then we can take any questions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Minister, anything you want to add?
No, I will allow just one comment and allow the DM to say something. But honourable members, if you listened to this two presentations, it just tells you that we're dealing with a highly technical department. 80% of our staff, it's not technical people, it's general people. I won't even say 20% are technical people. Even less than 20%. But what you are seated with, your compensation budget is almost saturated now to appoint new people. But you are seated with these people who are not technically empowered to deal with these issues. I think that's the biggest threat which we are facing. I thought that point is very, very important, that the members should understand it, that public works has never been a general department. For instance, in the apartheid government, you had all the right skills. I'm not sure whether it was as a result of our own policies. Those people were allowed to leave. And what happened? They are the ones who are consultants now, from outside, charging. They are charging, not necessarily even double dipping. They are charging sometimes 2-3 times more. Yes. The private sector, when it deals with government, doesn't treat you like an ordinary. Anything, even if you buy soap, whatever you buy, if you are government, they would always increase their prices, because our pricing as government is very bad. You see, there's one thing which people have been crying about. You must bring 3 quotations to buy something. Even if those 3 quotations, the lowest, is 3 or 5 times more than when you would step into a shop, you must just take the 3 quotations. You can't go straight into a shop. That's in our policies. But maybe the DM might want to say just a few things before we allow for the question.
You see, a famous philosopher once said, progressive politicians should have a pessimism of the intellect. In other words, you mustn't tell lies to yourself faced with reality, you must, your intellect. But you must also have an optimism of the will. You mustn't become so pessimistic that you... So I think the minister has demonstrated quite a lot of honesty, let's not call it pessimism, about the reality, about the situation that's facing us. So I want to be a little bit more optimistic, okay, but without being unfair to the reality, but just in a few words, really. And I think part of the problem is also the minister is not actually giving himself enough credit for the process that he's led, which got a bit interrupted, but which he's led since he came in late 2011. Okay. And I think the lady started to help us to understand that. So what she was saying was, when the minister came in, I think it's important for all of us to remind ourselves, when he came in 2011, there were 3 stacks of documentation on his desk. The one drop was from the Special Investigation Unit, the other was from the Public Protector, and the third was from the police or someone, and so on. And he wondered what he had done, what crime he had committed to have been deployed into this particular department. Okay. And I mean, I think since then, with the emphasis, one, on dealing with corruption, and which is the message that he continues to. But it's not just a question of dealing with corruption. What is the strategic role that you've got? And I think a minister, I'm not trying to suck up to him because I don't do that, but the first thing that he realized and provided political leadership on is, if you don't know what your asset base is, because that's what we are, we're a property thing. If you don't know what your asset basis is, you don't have a map to know what to do. And so, apart from dealing with the corruption, which continues to be an important function, the first massive objective was to develop an immovable asset register to understand what it is that we've got, what we're sitting on. And so that's what it showed us is that we are sitting on something like 90,000 buildings, okay, which include Parliament, union buildings, but also police stations, just a range of buildings, okay, in different conditions and so forth. The parliamentary villages, which we hope you won't go there. So a whole range of things, okay. On 30,000 land parcels, more or less, which, as someone said, is the biggest property portfolio in South Africa by far. The next biggest is Growthpoint, which is seven to ten times bigger than them. So that was the first major achievement. A movable asset register. We know what our properties are, where they are, the exact, and so on. But once you've done that, as Nialedi was so accurately telling us, that's not good enough. You still need to know what is the condition of them. Are you leasing them out? Are they vacant? Are they occupied? And then, even more complicated, what's inside of them? Are there boilers? What is the state of the boilers? Are there lifts and so on? So I'm saying all that because we can get very pessimistic and forget that the ability now of Nialedi to say that we know that there are X number of boilers and we know that, half of them are in not good condition and so on. All of those wouldn't have been possible if the earlier progress had not been made. So I'm not trying to be over-optimistic or sell you some spin story and to suggest that everything is fine. Okay. Then the other big point that the minister keeps making, and is exactly right, is that in order to manage this, what we realize is that you need a dedicated property management trading entity. And again, that is something the minister has led us in. So we finally have set up over the last several years a dedicated standalone ring-fenced what we call property management trading entity. So the actual department is quite small and has a regulatory role mainly and policy role and so on. Where the bulk of our resources and person power and so on are located is in this property management trading entity. Now, the minister's frustration is that he says that in this property management trading, what it needed to be is professional heavy, to have lots of people like Nialedi, who's a recent incomer, okay, who's a serious engineer, or Tata Maroka and others. So, and we've begun to do that. But of course, we couldn't fire the existing general staff in our department. So correctly, what we've got is a property management trading entity, but because correctly, we can't just fire people who were brought on board without a clear strategic understanding. So that's why the professional profile of what we've got is not the right professional profile, which is why we need to bring in people, we need to set up the high performance center and so on, so that we also get assistance from skilled people. But also we need to train the people that we've got, and some are not going to be so trainable, but we've got to create those prospects for them as well. So what I'm trying to do is to suggest that when we report specifically on progress being made on student accommodation or on the maintenance issues, it's progress that's not great yet, okay? But if you go back 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and I've been here now for, I think, 7 years, I want to assure the committee that we're not happy with what we're doing. I want to assure you on the specific issues that you're asking in general, but I want you to understand, and I think the other speakers have done that, have also tried to locate where we are today against where we're coming from. I think very significant progress has been made with challenges and so on. So I meant to make it one sentence, and it turned out to be a whole long. It was a long sentence, but just very important to, I think, to. And I thought that Nialedi's input just gives you a sense. Here's a person, a youngish person. She'll say she's not that young. She's young, youngish black woman professional. That's what we need. More and more in the department, and that's So we're very proud of what we're beginning to see coming through in our department.
Thank you, dear. Members, I think it's your time. But I want to note that really this thing of maintenance, we are going around with members. We know that South Africa has got a lot of properties. But the problem of maintenance, I remember this, we were in Northwest. I'm going to give you, we're in Northwest, we have been noticed, Mabat was beautiful, and but you can see maintenance is needed. Thank you, Honorable Anna, Doctor, and and I'll qualify.
I'm very much divided within myself when they are tapering the capacity, because after 25 years, at least going to socialism, we should have had a benders group. People, youth is going to be trained for a better performance. Going out of the apartheid system, having your own, is Communist Party. Chairperson, first and foremost, I'm going, I had a lot of questions. For instance, I've noted in the report the terms of maintenance. Okay? It's very pathetic in Warsaw. It's very pathetic in Warsaw. Oh, that is so. And secondly, the department, I suspect, I'm subject to copy correcting, there's a lot of centralization. Because in my own region, Oartambi Nomtata, you don't have a regional person, a regional official, because the minister is saying around that the implementers are the officials. This entity to me, that has been channeled and has got reinforcing, what is the mandate according to the constitution as per the department? To me, this entity is a department within a department. What is happening in the Wellington? The piping. To me, the issue is in the papers, but when you go down to the ground, nothing has been done by the department. And when I go to the analysis of, I will try and collect it while I was a properties of public works. And even if they are going for tender, they don't say what is the value of those who are going to be sold out. And what is the value of these who are currently in terms of the economic and the cost of the properties. How many properties as the department are we having? So those issues, it's a bit, I'm going for a meeting, Chairperson, I will hear from you. But seriously, as much as I can hear what is happening on the paper, but on the ground there's nothing that has been done. Look at the Podesta. At some stage, we use this. Look at PRD. It's not finished, the lift. When you're in the lift, the ceiling of the lift is naked, and the electric lines are just out. Oh no. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Doctor, just note.
Just to check.
Sorry.
I thought it would have been nice for the member, even if it's 2 minutes, to listen to some responses. Even if it's 2 minutes. Because I think there's. Okay.
Hello, Doctor.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. Personally, I would like to move on the trajectory of the Deputy Minister, you know, and say this glass is half full. I would like to commend the department. Surely, by no means an easy department. I don't know whether it was by your design or what that the members of the opposition decided to boycott this meeting.
So it serves us somewhat better. It serves us somewhat better. Chair, I'm coming on the inventory point of view, and I commend the department for saying that what is it that we are actually in charge of. And I would like to share with them that for provinces like mine, where you had a vendor, homeland of vendor, homeland of Kazankulu, homeland of Lebowa, then you have the Canada, I think they called it own department, then you had the Indians, then you had the white English Africans. There is a perception that we still have properties that we haven't taken on our register, and Tate Maroha will know, Tate Maroha, Kidula Modi F, Kamudi B, Kamudi B, there are government houses, people are staying in those houses for free, they're using electricity, they're using the water, nobody on paper. Current inventory doesn't show some, so these people are taking advantage. But when you consider consumption of the water, it's just too high. However, I'm not saying this in the spirit of blaming anybody. It isn't easy to turn a country around, particularly a country as fragmented as ours has been. But I would like to say, really, with the lady nearby here, we're getting somewhere. We're getting somewhere, but I think there is still a lot of these properties that we don't have on our register. Now, coming to the issue of wanting to sell some of them, you know, I don't know, in the past there was a view that the then Ramudike, was it Ramudike or Baduri, the place where now, that complex, that one of the universities wanted to buy that complex, convert it into a regional campus. And we were encouraged. At that time, I think our MEC for Public Works was the late Collins Chavan. We don't know what happened before that process could take root. We could not keep up with the rentals in Polokwane. Couldn't keep up with the rentals in Polokwane. And then a decision had to be made. Which campus do we move to? Do we go to the former Kiani Kazankulu? Do we go to Tokoyando? Do we go? They said, now we go to the Lebowa because it's closer to the capital. Let me park my discussion on that one. Chairperson, I also commend the department for establishing this management entity. Allow me, Chair, to share with them that as we were going round, last week we visited 8 municipalities in the Northwest, all of whom are under administration. The lesson that I personally picked up from what the people were saying in ever so many words was that time has come. Time has come that we clearly distinguish, the minister indicated in other words, we clearly distinguish between the political and the administration. Now, maybe powers that be should just work on the modalities. How are we going to make that clear distinction? Minister goes further and says, actually, continuity in all governments vests in the administration, because politicians come and go. So looks like now, after 25 years, we are matured enough now to come up with mechanism. How do we say, politics, you come thus far and no further. Administration, this is your area. But Chairperson, in my view, what I think bedevils our operations, Jay, is the lack of patriotism. I think that's what is bedeviling our operations. While people go burning these libraries, they go burning the clinics, they go doing whatever destruction, and they go digging that tarred road which we have put up together at such a cost. These people seem not to realize that the property belongs to them. Now, maybe the time has come. I don't know how in the Department of Public Works an awareness program or whatever we can call it to instill into our people patriotic spirit. It is our money. It is our building. It is our books. It's our children. Yesterday, these people who were sleeping outside at one of, is it Vets? And then, I don't know whether the security people, they just came and pulled one of these people on the blanket. So, even our young people don't realize it is our country, it is our university, it is our own skills that we must acquire and pick up our own economy, Chairperson. Patriotism, I don't know whether it should be a compulsory module or whether a school subject, or I really do not know where we can introduce this. Chair, by way of his organization, our organization, you can say you give up. Where is the political education? I said opposition is not with us here today. Where is that? Where do we conscientize and say, this is what we want to do? We don't have that indirectly. Oh, I thought it's on the NEC. I forgot what we did at NASA. So, Chairperson. No. I will withdraw. That one must not be on record. Yeah, that one is not. So, that is our biggest challenge, lack of patriotism. Our skilled young lady here can come with a million professional plans. But if I don't see how those plans relate to me, etc., she will work until she gets a gray hair. We won't make any progress. But all in all, Jay, I think we are getting somewhere compared to 1994, really, when we came in here and we had no idea as to what we need to do. My last point, Jefferson. Sometimes we destabilize ourselves, maybe unintentionally. We destabilize ourselves. Changing for the sake of changing. He was in public works, now he must go to sports and play soccer and with this. Then I don't know how do we let the powers that be, that changing for the sake of changing does not assist the transformation we want to see. So, I thank you for your indulgence, but I've read my heart out. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Honorable Oliphant.
Thank you, Chair.
you must get used to when Dr. Madime see a woman in action. She is getting so excited as if she can jump. You must get used to that, because that is why I wait for it. I know what is happening. But every now she said a lady, she said, no, it's the way she is. When she can see a woman, no shame. I don't hide that one. I don't hide. She is not jealous. She can encourage you and lift you up.
Thank you. That's all, if I will not.
Minister, thank you. For at least I can talk to you now. Thank you for our university, because in the Northern Cape, because you plan it. And by the time you go off as a minister, I get worried. And then you come back, now I'm happy. At least you see, and that is why I said this man was putting all along the money away. No, we you know, sometimes this Mokatlo way too. It's not thinking straight, but now that time it was not, the president was not thinking straight, because you've got plans. And then you, if you got plans, now it must come. This one is going to learn. And now you cannot jump. The officials cannot jump the minister. Minister must say, now you go, what is this? Why is here it after 6 months? What is this? Now you never contact. Aye. We are going to check. Thank you, minister. For our university, although they are still building, I just wanted, when April come, you must put the slice of a tikka on the Northern Cape so that they must be able to finish all the required places of the Northern. Now I want to understand this thing, because when I was in the province, I was the chair of public works, and my fight was the members' facilities, where the members are staying. So, and I don't know, is there money or is there no money, but tell this to the best thing that I ask for is not. The in my province is the safety of the MECs are more than the safety of us, being members of the provincial legislature. The house of the MEC is nice, intact, built with it got a roof high and all that. The house of the MPS, it's a fence. You know that there was this gate that they put on the ET that they open with the remote control. When you're not there, go out for 2 months, it's been stolen. And the garages does not want to open. Sometimes I don't know what you do, but it was not nice. Like now, the one I'm staying in Cape Town, it's nicer. That is why I don't complain. But the one at home, I always told him that I work myself up to stay in a nice parliament house in Cape Town. You will stay there because you don't want to talk. But I will meet the minister. Thanks. Another thing, the village where I stay. Minister, I stay in a two-room house. It was just a consenting thing. But I've got only one door that comes out in the front, the main entrance. The thing is, where my bedroom is situated is not at the. You don't see nothing. The light is only at the stoop. The light is only at the garage. Now, with the issue of water in Cape Town, I try to bring my car around. You know where the engine.
Tell them you are talking about Panic and Park.
No, I'll tell them. Don't worry.
The thinking that whenever Dharam exits, we go around. I was trying to put my car in until there. When I wash my car, the water must go in because there's no water for the grass and all that. But now when I wash it, that water goes until in the
drain.
Drain, eh? Whereas we see. But now that is not the issue. The issue is at the back of my head. It is just a smaller nyana light for every house, just to see. You know, sometimes the parliament is so busy that we, you and me know, we go off 10 o'clock. In that 10 o'clock, 3 days it was raining, and almost now even your underwears are no more there. You must now and try and make it overnight, it must end. You're afraid because there's a baby there. There are snakes. Huh? Whoa.
At least
it's
not lying.
Yeah. I like nature, but sometimes the nature makes me so scared that I... So that is why I said in the precipice of the backyard, of the back where we hang the water, just a light or maybe two flashlights each. But I was not even thinking about flashlights because flashlight is expensive. So maybe every house can have a light where you put it in your house and go light in the bed, because that is, it was only a suggestion. I don't know whether there is money, but when I talk to the caretaker, who public works, I say, okay, who public, okay, ma. Now public works is in front of me. Please, minister, consider me before my time group. Then so that I must see during my time, at least I managed to tell the minister to put this light in. But no. Ubuile is going to come back to finish our university in Kimberley. All the other parties. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Before I give you a chance to respond, Minister and your DG, there are four officials at the back there. They didn't introduce themselves. I don't remember. Can you just 1 minute introduce yourself that the minister can say that they are officials? Okay, start from there, Doctor.
My name is Michael Ngwali. I'm a researcher in the office of the chairperson, NCOP.
Hi, I'm Felicia Lombard. I'm the communications person for the committee. Good afternoon. I'm the communications officer for the committee.
Name?
Felicia.
What's her name?
Lombard, sorry.
Lombard.
Good afternoon. This name is Ceres. I'm the researcher to this committee. Good afternoon, I'm Nathrin Fakir and I'm the Executive Secretary of the Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Over to you, Minister, and your delegation, please.
Who comes in so bang for Islam? Okay. The issue you're raising about your facility, fortunately there's somebody from Prestige who will just take note. He will take the details. That's how we can deal with it. He will take your details and so on. Okay.
In the park.
Let's just come to the... You see, we're getting beaten, but also accolades for things we're not responsible for. The universities are outside us. WUSU, for instance. The universities, they do things independently. They are not even... relying on what is it, higher education. They're just given a budget by the different, by as per a particular formula, and they do their own maintenance and everything. So
Chair, sorry,
I have done DTI
to go public
hospital.
Okay, okay,
whatever. Yeah.
And
I think for the opening of the university in Northern Cape, the accolades must go to the Ministry of Higher Education.
Of Higher Education.
Yes, yes, Ministry of Higher Education helped. We might, I don't know whether it would help with the building, no. But Ministry of Higher Education, they've been leading that particular project during the time of Minister Nzimande and the time of Minister Naledi Pandu. So they've been dealing with those issues. The other issue raised of, in Mthatha we have a regional office. We're very present in Mthatha. We've been dealing with the courts and so on. But the buildings which the honorable member was mentioning, they belong to the province. They do not belong to us, yes. Those buildings belong to the province and they are housing the provincial staff of government in the Eastern Cape. So they belong to the province. Our regional offices, we deal with our national infrastructure. That's why we are there dealing with the court. We've just finished a very modern court in Mthatha and so on. But the colleagues will add, you are correct. You see, all along, when you say the glass is half full, you see, all along, people will come here and don't tell the truth. You know, I remember days when I would come into the portfolio committee or any committee in parliament. Whilst we're getting in there, we'll just be chased away and say, no, there's nothing which you have presented here. Because people used to lie. And I think what we're starting to do now, like Ms. Makubela has done and Dyer, is to say, here are the weaknesses. Because the first step to address any problem is to acknowledge the weaknesses. If you don't acknowledge the weaknesses, you're not going to be able to address that problem. You keep on covering it. And we are saying, and these are not, cannot just be associated with individuals. They are systemic issues. It's lack of proper systems and so on. It's lack of proper skills. It's poor management. The style of management has always been very poor on how to deal with the public works. So it's a combination of factors. But if you want to address, don't cover that. And I'm also impressed with the way they've drafted this particular report. You are right. These properties, it's not even a perception, it's correct. There are properties which have been stolen, if I were to use that word, in Mthatha, in all the former homelands. But even in Pretoria and even here in Cape Town, there are properties which have been stolen by people. Some were stolen on the eve of 1994. Some, because we're very chaotic with our asset register and so on, people just quietly transferred them. That's part of the corruption, which sometimes even goes to the deeds offices. People have friends there. They can quickly deal with. Some people were literally refusing with the state property. One example is the popular Flat Plus. Remember that one which was used by the apartheid centurocrats, where they were torturing a lot of comrades and killing them there. And one poor boy there refused to give us that one. We had to win it in court. He was saying it's his farm. So, but there are other properties which were used for other things which didn't come into the open and people have quietly. That's why we're going to start a process now. But also that process, it means you need to involve a lot of security in terms of investigating those. Fortunately, some of the people, they know those properties, that this used to belong to government. What is bedeviling its lack of patriotism? I think on this one you can go a very long way. Lack of
work ethic. And it's a problem which is facing the public service. It's very easy in the public service not to report to work, and nobody has noticed you that you are not at work. It can happen in the private sector. In the public service, it's very easy. It's very easy that people every Monday get sick or come late after 10 o'clock. On Friday, they leave early. Nothing is being done. There are no consequences. Hence, there is no work ethic in some instances. And we need to, whether we like it or not, as parliament, as the executive and so on, find a way of introducing new work culture, which is not there. Let me put it differently. We will fight with this one with my deputy minister when it comes to authority. Because he believes authority, don't impose it from outside. It must be within. But you know what? With the Boer boys in apartheid, people knew discipline. People working in an office, they knew what has to be done, what has not to be done. That authoritarianism was there. Whether it's based on Calvinism, to say discipline and authority are very, very key. So we lack discipline. We lack discipline. The issues of authority, people just do as they wish and become arrogant. So, and I think that's what you're talking about. You're talking about the new work culture, the new work ethic, and the issue of discipline. And that discipline must come from within. In other countries, it's not easy to join to get a job in the public service. It's regarded as people who has very high status to be able to be offered a job in the public service. With us, it's not. It's not a big deal. Before I just give to my colleagues, I thought I had one point to raise. No. I think from my side, I'm fine, but I will allow the Deputy Minister and the colleagues to respond.
If I can come in on the issue which I'm not fighting with him. but and to agree with what you're saying about the public service and their lack of, not across all of the public service, but we know there are problems. But I think that the problem we were raising was a slightly different one. It's not unrelated to this. And that is, as you mentioned, that what happens is that communities, frustrated maybe for good reason, irritated with government or whatever, burn, they destroy roads, they burn a clinic, they burn a school or whatever. And interestingly, this was quite a long discussion that we had at last week's Cabinet Lekotla. And part of what we're saying is, obviously we condemn that, and it's wrong. But why is it happening? And there are many reasons. But the part of what we're saying is that the way in which we think about what we're doing as government is that we're a delivery government. What the current Minister of Mineral Resources once described when he was wearing a different cap is that we're a wheelbarrow state, that we wheel in things and dump them on people, and then expect people to have a sense of ownership of these things, the road, the clinic, the whatever. So what we're saying is that we need to think differently. How do we make the citizens of South Africa the co-producers, the joint producers of a new South Africa, rather than just people that vote for us or don't vote for us, vote once every 5 years, and then we promise to deliver X number of this, Y number of that, and so on. How do we develop a different relationship with people? Okay, so you're absolutely right, Minister. Inside of the public service, the work ethic is often not what it should be. But let's remember that there are some people say 9 million people who aren't working, who are unemployed, and this is often the source of these problems. So part of a solution, it's not the silver bullet that solves all problems, but something that we're very active in as the public works department, is public employment programs. EPWP programs, working for water, working on fire, many, many different things, which all departments theoretically should be involved in one way or another, so that the local community participates in the planning and the construction and the maintenance of the nearby road, of the clinic, of the resource and so on. So I think that that's also, so we've got to move out of the delivery, vote for us and then we'll deliver, to together we have to, it's a message that we used to have, together we are going to, exactly. Yeah, so that's all I wanted to say. Is I'm not arguing with you, and I agree with you that we need inside of the public service. I mean, countries like India and China, which are, you know, countries with successful development, as you correctly say, it's a huge, it's a massive competition to get into the public service. I mean, for historical reasons, it's different here, and there are good reasons why we've expanded public service employment, but there's the additional hurdle. So this doesn't go anywhere near the specific questions you were asking me, but it's about, and we had a long and I think very fruitful discussion, Minister, at the Cabinet Lakota around these matters, raising exactly the questions you are saying, and how do we begin to think differently what we're doing. So yeah, I haven't gone into Pelican Park and all of those things, but
and the snakes
and so on, the detail. But sometimes it's important to step back, we think, and just ask the bigger questions. Yeah, and what are the approaches? And I like your thing, the glass is half full. The big question, is it a half full glass, which I think it is? Is it filling up or is it emptying? What is the trajectory? And I'd like to believe it's filling, okay? It's filling rather than getting more empty. Yeah.
I just want to cover only one point, the one that was raised by the Honourable Member when she left, is the area of whether the property management trading entity is a department within a department. I think we're in a trajectory of moving towards an end state, which will see to it that this property management trading entity is self-sustainable. All the things that were being said here, it will be able to generate its own resources, to ensure that government do not rely heavily on the fiscals, to ensure that we do have a maintenance strategy, and ensure that this leasing out that you were saying, Mr. Governor, here, is going to rely heavily on the sustainability of this property management trading entity. So now, one will see it as part and parcel of the department, but going forward, we'll actually see to it that it is an entity that assists government to manage its affairs much better. Efficiency and so on. That's the one. I thought I should actually cover that one.
I think just maybe one or two comments. I think ministers dealt with the issue of accountability for various levels of government. Some of the properties are actually in the provinces. But there's a bigger National Department of Public Works mandate where we need to lead the discussion about asset management across the state. There's an act called GIAMA that talks about how the state must manage its assets. And even the properties that we do not manage directly ourselves, we've got a duty to give some institutional thinking about how we deal with that. And maybe just to say, I think just to make a point around the issue of asset management, because the lack of asset management comes across as lack of maintenance. You see it as lack of maintenance. But the problem is, when we construct these facilities, we don't think through the entire life cycle. Like, for instance, now, as the Minister has mentioned, we have spent R1 billion in Limpopo High Court. 6 months later, lifts are not working because we have not had a plan and a funding for the entire life cycle. And I think Nyelik has already touched on it, that what we are doing now is that in all our newly constructed facilities, we're actually going in and saying, we've built, but do you have a life cycle management which is funded and planned? Because if you don't have that, you're constructing a state asset that you're going to waste because you don't maintain it correctly. So that's a big point. I think as we build hospitals, build schools, the life cycle issue becomes a big issue. But on the other side, which is the positive side, is that the management of this state asset
creates opportunities. When you look at the portfolio that Ms. Nyeleti runs, behind it, there has to be a facilities management industry to take care of the state, and that industry to generate jobs, skills. So if we don't do it, we are missing the industry, but we are missing the benefits of that industry. So those are the kind of things that I think, as we think about going forward, we need to deal with. And I think the issue of the institutional capacity, I think DC has raised in terms of the PMTE, but I think you also have to see this way, that when you look at state-owned enterprises like Sunrod and Transnet, there's a recognition that for those portfolios who require an institution that is capacitated enough to run on behalf of the state, those portfolios. I think with PMT, I think, is the recognition that the property of the state, in terms of its complexity, both in skills and funding, is equal to the Sunrise, to the Transnet, because if you try to run it within the state, you're going to come stuck in terms of funding, skills, and things like that. So those are the things that I think, you know, emerges out of the discussions. So I think in terms of the individual issues, members, I think if there's specific things that we have missed, I think we will note, and we will probably maybe just send back in writing, because most of the things, I think, both between the Minister, DG, and the Deputy Minister, I think they've been answered, but we can provide written answers for some of the issues that have been raised that we have not covered. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honourable Dr. Montame, you can ask
yes.
David, but after that you can thank the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and also the Senior Manager for coming.
Monitoring mechanisms. In his language, Tishomkhulu, they used to talk of the inspectors. And when they became extra revolutionary, they said, hey, we don't want these people here. So, yes, now we threw the baby with the bathwater. Now maybe we must, let's bring them back, because that High Court in Puluko, if we had this monitoring mechanism, we could have picked up the shortcomings on time before the cost escalated. So if we correct in ourselves, I say we are doing well, but he says we must be humble enough to acknowledge mistakes where we made them. So let's sector in these monitoring mechanisms. What we're going to call it, maybe not inspectors, I don't know what we can call them, but we need that arm of government. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank the Minister on behalf of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very, very, very much. Tishomkhulu and the Gomanis, both your Gomanis, I mustn't make that mistake, together with your civil service, Mr. Maroga. Maybe Chairperson, I must share this one. There was once a very big march in Polokwane against Ms. Maroga. When you are still at ESCO?
Yeah.
it was robust. It was, and they were saying, you don't own this ESCO, Maroga. It's not yours. It's thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, ministers. Thank you, the beautiful lady and the mother behind us.